is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run. Fires down the middle. It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted. Tre Day. Tre'Davious White. He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there. McCoy cuts to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Good afternoon, welcome. We are live at One Bills Drive, and the offseason is here, ladies and gentlemen. The much dreaded, no, we don't dread the offseason, we enjoy it. It's just the early part of the offseason.
Yeah, it's the early part.
It seems so far to next season right now, right? It feels like we're never going to get there. We will get there.
I remember last year thinking about it, and you said, yeah, it's going to be 9 months until we get to figure out what this coach can do, you know, and now we're thinking about the same thing. We got a long while, but this offseason, I think, is exciting. Last year, nobody knew what was happening with Tyrod. Nobody knew what was happening with the coaching or the general manager. I mean, well, we did know the general manager until that whole thing happened, but there was so much to happen last year. I think this offseason is a much more exciting offseason, number one, because your team just ended the drought, and we talked about that stuff. They got into the playoffs. So you have a lot of optimism there. But number two, because you have so much draft, so much capital there, so much that you can do in the draft, we know there's a lot of holes on this team. There's a lot of free agents that you got to figure out what you're going to do with. Free agency starts. We're going to be talking a lot about that moving forward, talking a lot about the draft moving forward. I just think this offseason there's a lot of positive things to look forward to.
Yeah, and you have this base to build on, even though you don't start from that, but you have this base of success to build upon, right, with the 9-7 record and a playoff berth and all the things that went well, knowing that you've got a laundry list, a long list of things that have to be addressed this year. So it should make for an interesting offseason. It's just today almost, Donald. I'm not trying to be Debbie Downer here, but there's no players in the building now. The energy, like, when players are here,
yeah,
is palpable.
Different.
And when they're not here, I mean, we talk about it when the players come back for the off-season conditioning program in April, how it's unbelievable, right? It's a little bit
– It's a different feeling.
And now the players, for the most part, are all gone, and the energy is gone with them. And it's just – you feel a little bit like, all right, you might as well just snow for the next 3 months and hunker on down. But we'll get through it. I know we'll get through it.
It's like when you walk into the field house, it seems like the lights are a little dim in there. And it's like, man – all right, is it going to be like this until the guys get back?
September?
Right. It's crazy. It does feel a little bit different when the players are not here. You still see the coaches walking around as they're probably still doing their evaluations. You see them working out and all of that stuff. But, yeah, you're right. It's a little different right now.
But once again, we have a good show lined up for you here today as we work our way through the offseason, beginning with today. With no players here, but there are coaches here, as Donald said. General Manager Brandon Bean is here. And this is what the show is going to look like today. It's a heck of a show, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, if all of our offseason shows have a lineup like this, we're going to be in good shape. Coming up at 12:30, the bottom of this hour, Trey Wingo joins us a little bit earlier than normal. Trey Wingo, the host of ESPN's NFL Live. He is also the co-host of Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio. Trey Wingo just down in Atlanta at the national championship game. We'll talk to him about that as well. And the Bills' loss in the playoffs and, the rest of the playoff picture. Trey Wingo going to join us live on the line at 12:30 today. 1 o'clock, we will carry live the news conference, the big season-ending wrap-up news conference from head coach Sean McDermott and general manager Brandon Bean. We'll be picking that up at 1 o'clock. Sometime after that, maybe closer to 2, Brandon Bean will join us live here in studio, in our One Buffalo studio, the GM of the Buffalo Bills. We're talking how I know we haven't had on the GM Brandon Bean since training camp, right? It's been a long time. You're talking like 4 or 5 months now.
It's been a long time, and I think – I mean, he has been, down his head down to the pavement, figuring out different guys to bring in. We see him every Tuesday working out new guys. They sign new guys to the practice squad. They release somebody, then they sign somebody new. I mean, that's been happening all season. Even this whole playoff week, it was the same thing. It's like you see it every week. Now, this is his season. We were talking about this in the office. This is Brandon Bean's season, because now you have to figure out what's going to happen with free agency, what free agents are going to be out there on the market that you might want to bring in here. So you have to do all of your background checks, you have to work with your pro personnel, talk to different teams about these guys, wherever they would be coming from, try to figure out your team, number one, you have to evaluate your team with Coach McDermott and say, look, this is who we're going to bring back. This is probably not who we're going to bring back. We might try to trade this person, all of this stuff. I mean, this is his season right now, so it'll be good to talk to him about it a little bit. A
lot of issues to deal with, quarterbacks and free agents and draft picks, all that draft capital the Bills have to spend, and Brandon Bean is a good place to start with this Buffalo offseason. We will start with him coming up after his news conference with Sean McDermott somewhere around 2 o'clock. Want to start with you also today and getting your opinions, and plenty of time in this offseason to evaluate where they're going, what they're going to do, how they're going to handle the quarterback situation, et cetera. I still am in the mood, Donald, to look back and reflect on the 2017 season, which just ended a couple of days ago, and the good things that went on and the bad things, the things that might concern you. That's the kind of the focus of our Twitter poll today. We put it up on Twitter a little while ago. Want to know from you, new head coach, obviously, Sean McDermott comes in as the new head coach of the Buffalo Bills. We want to know from you on telephone or on Twitter, what is the best thing that Sean McDermott did in his first year as head coach of the Buffalo Bills? Obviously, he did a lot of good things, but what's the best thing he did?
Man, the drought.
The drought is leading. End the playoff drought, 53%, more than half of you say that is the best thing that Sean McDermott did. 44% of you say he has laid the base for a new culture. We'll talk more about that in a second. Just 2% say survived that midseason three-game losing streak. 1% had something else in mind. Let's hear from you on the telephone lines, if you would. What's the best thing Sean McDermott did in his first year as Buffalo Bills head coach? The lines are open, 803-0550, the number, or outside Buffalo, toll-free call at 1-888-552-550. A lot of little things, some big things, but what's the best thing that Sean McDermott did? Let me tell you what I think, and then I want to know what you think.
Okay.
That's the way this show works.
Okay.
I love the fact that they've ended the playoff drought. I think it's an immense burden off the shoulders of the people who work here, the coaching staff, the general manager, the players, and particularly an immense burden lifted off the shoulders of the fans who've lived through that. Players and coaches haven't lived through that. I love the fact that the drought is over, the 17-season playoff drought. But I don't think that's the best thing that Sean McDermott accomplished this year, and I'll tell you why. First of all, whether or not the playoff drought ended this year, I think the season was a success. In fact, I think I said it before the Miami game. Mm-hmm. For this reason, they have laid the foundation for changing the culture here. They have tremendous personnel switches this year in terms of who plays and who they would draft. Just an amazing turnover of personnel. And all of that was accomplished while they also ended the playoff drought. But make no mistake about it. I mean, the Bills won their games. They won 9. They put themselves in a position to end the drought. But the drought didn't end until Andy Dalton connected on that pass with Tyler Boyd. I mean, that's not a Sean McDermott move. He put the team in position to end the drought. But the eventual clinching of the playoff berth was not in their hands at the very end, not to diminish it. And it was great. It was a wonderful moment. People are still buoyant about it, still excited about it. But to my mind, the best thing that Sean McDermott has done here this year is lay the foundation for the future. Yes, they won 9 games. Yes, they clinched the playoff spot. Tremendous, exciting moments all season long. All of that great. The third option we have up for you is surviving that 3-game losing streak. That was big. I mean, we'll ask Sean McDermott about it when he's here with us later this week. I had the feeling then in Kansas City that morning, November 26th, and still looking back, the season was on the brink back on November 26th because of the nature of the losses. Thursday night in New York, a terrible beatdown at the hands of the Saints here at home, and then going out west and losing badly to the Chargers. Season was on the brink. They survived that. They rebounded from that and managed to make a run for the playoffs. But the best thing they did here was to lay the foundation, to establish a new standard of what is acceptable, how this team will work, to lay the foundation of the type of players they want, the type of approach they want to the season, the serious-minded nature of the work they're going to do. To me, that is the best thing Sean McDermott has done. Breaking the playoff drought is an added benefit. You ever go to New Orleans and they give you a little extra something on your plate? They call it a lagniappe.
Yeah, I
have. That's what that is. It's, oh, you get all this plus you break the playoff drought. Yeah.
I think when you look at the results right now on the Twitter poll, it just goes to show you the mindset of the people here in the city of Buffalo or Western New York, period. The fans, Bills fans all over the place. You have over 50% of people who have voted say ending the playoff drought. And I think it goes back to last week when we had the Twitter poll. I forgot what it was, but it was something about,
are you satisfied with the season?
Yeah, there you go. Are you satisfied with the season? And you had so many people say, I am satisfied.
Almost half, I think.
Right, exactly.
50% said, yeah, I'm good.
I think people just wanted the drought to end. And it was like, I mean, you had a certain amount of people that truly they were like, all right, I'm excited about this game, but if they lose, I'm happy the fact that they just ended the drought, that they made it into the playoffs, ended that drought. That was something that was lifted off the season, lifted off of everybody's, the monkey off everybody's back. The fact of the matter is, and Coach McDermott said this when he first was hired, he wants to build a team that can win season after season after season. And ending the drought is one thing, but you do have to lay a base for a foundation to have a team that will win season after season. That, whether that's changing culture, that's drafting the right players, bringing the right guys in via free agency without having to make huge splash moves, paying a lot of money, all of that stuff, bringing guys in. It's actually changing the culture. It's not just about, yeah, it starts with this locker room, but it's also about guys around the league saying, okay, you know what? Buffalo is a place that I might want to go, you know, because for a long time, I'm sure Buffalo was a place where I don't want to go to Buffalo. They're not winning. How much you paying me? That would be the only reason why they would go now. Yeah. Now you have changed that. You changed the culture inside the locker room, which changed the and you won. You ended the playoff drought, which changes the perspective of national media. It changes the perspective of players around the league and free agents that might come on the market right now. So I think changing or laying a base for a culture has to be number one on this, because it's not just here, it's nationally.
Let's look at it from, and you can speak to this, from a player's perspective, a potential free agent perspective. Now the Buffalo Bills approach you. I'm not talking about big splashy guys. But now the Buffalo Bills approach you this spring and say, we think we have a place for you, and we're going to make the money right. We're going to make the playing opportunity right. But your image of the Buffalo Bills and who they are would have changed based on what's happened here, right?
I think so.
You would think about, huh, Buffalo, huh? They play that crazy snow game. That looked like fun. They have those great fans who show up at the airport when it's 1 degree out. That would be kind of cool to play in an atmosphere like that. They seem to be together. They seem to be a team that is bonded and functional and respects and – you know, we'll ask Sean about it when he's on the show. They talked about love a lot this year, love for each other. Those are things that would attract, I would think, a free agent, right?
Those are definite things that would attract a free agent. When you have Coach McDermott, you know, who makes a switch, but everybody sticks behind him.
Yeah.
When you see guys make plays and the whole sideline erupts, all of the players on the sideline go crazy and everybody's dancing together and all of that stuff. I mean, that changes the outlook of this organization. It changes the outlook of this city, you know, to a possible free agent. I mean, that is huge, because if you want free agents to come here, number one, it's money. But number two, it's about what is the perception. Like, you think about, and not to talk bad about another city or another organization, but the Cleveland Browns right now.
Yeah.
It's hard for them to get free agents to go in there unless they say, we're going to pay you $100 million. And that's just the fact of the matter, because they made so many mistakes in the past and it hasn't gotten any better. They've drafted quarterback after quarterback after quarterback. I mean, the perception right now there is you don't want to be drafted, especially if you're a quarterback. You don't want to go to Cleveland. That's just going to end your career, you know. So for a long time, I don't know if Buffalo was looked at that way, but it wasn't a positive in terms of how people talked about it, in terms of players that wanted to come here. And I think it's a little bit different now, because you have a coach and a GM who are making certain moves. You have players in the locker room. You have leadership. You have that whole drought thing that ended. So everybody saw the fan base travel to Jacksonville. Everybody saw the fan base at the airport. Everybody saw the fan base donate all of this money to Andy Dalton. I mean, that goes a long way for free agents who are coming in here. And it goes a long way for draft picks. Now, when you're a draft pick, you get drafted to where you get drafted. You just want to make a name for yourself in the league. But if you get drafted to a place now where it's like, man, they got something going here. I want to be a part of that.
For a certain kind of player, though, I think. For a certain kind of player.
For a certain kind of player,
if you're a guy who likes palm trees and nice weather and, you know, sunshine and sunglasses and clubs, this is probably not the place for you.
No. And it's, you know, the palm trees and all of that stuff is one thing, because even, like, New York City is not – it's not hot and all of that stuff. But just the thought process behind, that's New York City. That's a big city, big market, a lot of media, all of that stuff. Now, everybody knows Buffalo. When you think about it, you do think about whether you have so many players from Florida. You think about whether you think it's a small market. They haven't won in a long time. Now that's a little bit different now.
Yeah.
You know, so I think he's laid that base now for a culture change. He's laid the base now for a different perspective on this city. And that will go a long way in the future, in the next couple of months, as we talk about free agency and we talk about the draft.
What is the best thing Sean McDermott did in his first year? I think laying the foundation. Look, the culture isn't changed yet, by the way, and I don't think Coach would tell you that. We'll ask Brandon Bean about that, too. I think there's still work to be done, but I believe he has laid the foundation for how to change the culture here. And we want to hear your thoughts on that at 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. What is the best thing Sean McDermott did in his first year? A tweet on this, Jason Stamper tweets in, he helped us make the playoffs. That helped change the culture. Jason, respectfully, I disagree. I disagree. I think the culture was in the process of being changed before Andy Dalton hit that pass to Boyd downfield.
Right.
I think the foundation had been laid. No, the season was over for the Bills. I mean, the regular season was over. I think the culture had been changed. The foundation had been laid. The roster had been overhauled. A lot more attention to detail, a lot more focus on work and, you know, going through the process, getting the work done. And then, like gravy, that pass is hit for the Cincinnati Bengals to Tyler Boyd, and that made the Bills in the playoffs. But I disagree. McDermott making the playoffs has not changed the culture. I think that was in effect before that pass was hit in the Bengals game.
You remember when back in the offseason, when we would talk about the culture and they want to change the culture, and we would continuously say, when does the culture change? Do you win first and then that changes the culture, or do you change the culture and then you win? And we couldn't figure that out. As you got through the season, you could start to see, man, he is starting to change the culture. And then when they did survive that three-game skid, it's like, okay, these guys still stayed behind him, even after the whole switch of quarterbacks and all of that stuff, and these guys bounced back. Teams of the past might not have bounced back. I was on a team that didn't bounce back, you know? So teams of the past didn't do that. Now you've changed that where you have these mentally strong, mentally tough players that can bounce back from something like that. And it was bad. I mean, it was really bad. You got blown out 3 weeks in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And the last game being, I mean, 5 interceptions and, I mean, out on the West Coast. That was it was a rough skid right there. So for you to be able to bounce back and win a lot of your last games in the season to put yourself in position to be in the playoffs. And then you have some help from another team. But I think that just goes to show that this team is mentally tough now. You have something different here than what you had in the past. And I think that just goes to show that the culture started to change before they even got into the playoffs.
Give us a call. Let us know what you think. What's the best thing Sean McDermott did for the Buffalo Bills in his first year as head coach as we reflect on the 2017 season? We got a couple of options for you on the Twitter poll. You don't have to stay confined to that, wherever you want to take it. 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. The best thing Coach McDermott did. We'll start with Herb in West Seneca. Hello, Herb. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hi, Murph. Hi, Donald.
Hi.
What's up, Herb?
Yeah, I think Sean McDermott, the best thing he did was start to change culture here in Buffalo. And my opinion on that is started right off the bat with Defend Our Dirt. I think he's turned us into a blue-collar, hard-working football team. And I'll give you one example, and that's Lorenzo Alexander since he's come here. He has been an awesome linebacker. McDermott had to make this job his own, and he has done that. And I believe he don't get the flashy players like you guys said. I believe he goes out and gets those blue-collar, hard-working, 60-minute players from game to game, from beginning to end.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I mean, Lorenzo was here before McDermott, a year before that, but your point is well made. And let me make I want to make sure that I don't think the culture is fully changed for a while. I think it might take a process of a couple of years, but I think they have put in the foundation to change the culture. The folks who play here now know what the expectations are, know what the standard for work is, know what's expected of them, and they follow it and adhere to it. And I think that to me is the best thing that's going on here.
I think because changing the culture, as we talked about it, we've been talking about it, you know, you change the mentality somewhat. But now you have to actually draft players. I think they want to get to a point where they have a good, solid core of guys, and they don't have a situation where you have however many free agents you have leaving right now. You know, I mean, it's hard when you're a winning team, guys want to get their money, but that's why they say you have to build through the draft so that you have a good core of guys that are winning games but still on their rookie contracts. And you don't have to worry about every year we got 15 guys that are free agents. You know, so I think that's part of a culture. And for me, that's the most amazing part of this season The fact that they made all of these different moves, the fact that they did win, and the fact that they got all of this draft capital now to work with, and so that they can pick up a lot of guys, and hopefully they truly know how to draft. We're going to talk to Brandon Bean. This is his first draft. We're going to talk to him about it a little bit. If they can draft the right guys here and get a good amount of 5-6 starters out of this draft, out of what do you have, 11 picks right now, if you can get like half of those guys to actually contribute and give you some good playing time and help you get back to the playoffs or something like that next year, that right there will change in terms of your culture with the draft, because now people are like, man, these guys know how to draft. That team knows how to draft. They're not really trying to overpay anybody. That's all part of the culture.
Yeah.
You know, that's the perception of New England until this year when they went out and spent all this money, because I believe they feel like it's coming to an end. The perception of New England was, they're not paying guys all this money. If you go there because you want to win. You
right.
go there because you want to put the work in. You want to win. Guys will take a pay cut to go there. That's their culture now. You know, inside that locker room, it's like, we know that we put the work in. We know we're going to win 10, 11 games every year. Now it's just the point of getting through the playoffs to the Super Bowl
right.
and winning a Super Bowl.
And by knowing how to draft, I believe, you may agree or disagree, I believe you know how to draft the players you want. You
right.
know, you don't just go by the consensus, oh, this is the best wide receiver, this
right.
is the guy that everybody says is going to be the best quarterback. No, you draft well if you have an idea of what you want, the type of player you want, the type of character you want. And, you know, the Bills got a lot of contributions from their rookie draft class this year. No reason to think with all that ammunition this year they might not be able to do it again. Here's a call from Sean in Orchard Park. Go ahead, Sean. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Good.
I want to touch a little bit, just to, you know, respectfully disagree a little on the when you mentioned, you know, guys with the palm trees, you know, they don't necessarily, a certain type of player wants to be here and others move on. And if you'll let me just have it say for a second, then I'll lay the proof in a second here. But I've watched for decades, and you see, you'll get maybe one or two really good players. You draft someone good. They don't want to stick around. I mean, Buffalo is a cold weather environment. It's, you know, it's the same thing happens in hockey as well. You get a good player. They want to be here, you know, to make a name for themselves. And as soon as they can, you tell their agent, get me out of this place, you know.
No, not really. I don't agree, Sean.
I don't think you're going to get a total number of players at the same time here to be an actual force in the NHL. I'm also going to lay the proof.
Let's talk about that for a second. Let's talk about that for a second, Sean.
Hold on 1 second. I live in a community.
No, you hold on for a second. This is my show. See, it says right there.
Okay.
I'm going to let you talk. The weather, I think, is way down on the list of considerations. I'm not talking about hockey. I don't know anything about hockey. The weather is way down on the list of considerations. I think it is about culture. Who am I playing with? What's expected of me? Do we have a chance to win there? Do they treat people well? I think the weather is like, and again, we're generalizing here in terms of players, but for the players you want, I don't think the weather should be a consideration at all. Sean, your turn.
Yeah, so, I mean, it is a small time of the year that the weather is a problem. I don't think it's just that, but you know, I lived in San Francisco. I've lived in, you know, Washington State. And, you know, there are much bigger cities. It's not just the weather. It's stuff to do. There's not really a whole lot happening in Buffalo. So, you know,
okay.
If you have money to burn, where do you want to be? And I just think spread across, if you look at even in hockey and football, athletes don't want to stick around an area where there's nothing to do. I mean, you even had the juniors. You had the one guy get in trouble for saying there's nothing to do in Buffalo. Like, I mean, just calling it like it was. But
well, who wants him on your team? Who wants that guy?
I live in a community in Orchard Park, I won't name it, where a lot of the Bills players actually live. And we got a speed limit in our community at 20 miles an hour. These guys don't care about the community they're in. They're zipping up and down our road at 50, 60 miles an hour.
And what do you infer from that, Sean?
What's that?
What do you take from that? What does that mean?
That when they're here in our community, they don't have any respect for the people here.
Oh, no, Sean. I'm not going to let you say that.
Behind.
I would suggest you call the Orchard Park Police and have them wait there and ticket those guys. And I'll confess this too, Sean. I sometimes go over the speed limit in Orchard Park too.
Property. I'm just telling you the way they conduct themselves, it's not an area they want to stay in.
Okay. Thanks, Sean. That guy's totally full of baloney. He is. He's wrong on just about every utterance that came out of his mouth.
Yeah, I think ultimately, first of all, players do respect the community. I think there's a lot of players in this locker room that do a lot in this community, whether it's out here in the South Towns, whether it's down in the city. I mean, they respect the community. I don't know if guys are speeding and all of that stuff. I don't know. I'm not in their cars. but I will say this. I think the biggest thing you want to do is be able to draft the guys that you want to be your core guys.
Yeah.
And that's what you want to do. You want to draft the guys that are your core guys that want to win, that want to be here, that want to help to change this culture as we're talking about. I can't get into guys speeding through communities and all that stuff.
That's absurd. Hey, Bills fans, the votes are in. Am I too hard on that guy?
I mean,
he's entitled to his opinion, but come on. They speed through your neighborhood, so they don't want to be here. So what, you can't keep free agents? Totally off point. That's so wrong. Bills fans, the votes are in for the Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week. Why do you laugh at me?
That was funny, yeah.
The Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week. And this week, the Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week. In a close vote, Lorenzo Alexander. A tremendous game down there in the wild card playoff game. 38.1% of you voted for Zoe. 36% voted for Shady McCoy. 23% for Kyle Williams. 3% for Preston Brown. Lorenzo Alexander, the Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week. We vote every week. Go to BlueRockEnergy.com/POTW. or Blue Rock Energy's Facebook page to learn more. Coming up, Trey Wingo from ESPN. He's probably spent around his neighborhood a couple of times in Connecticut. He'll be joining us on the line when we return. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Back to the show, John Murphy, Donald Jones, notorious speeders in Orchard Park. You do know it's 30 miles per hour on most streets in Orchard Park, Donald.
Let me tell you, I love my hometown, but I've been known to speed a little
bit
through.
Yes, me too. You know, I once chased a speeder. I live in neighborhood in Orchard Park, and when I had little kids.
He became a cop.
This guy, every day, same time of the day, the boys would be playing. They were little kids playing in the front yard, and the guy speed by every day. Finally, I said, that's it. Hopped in the car, followed him right home, wagged my finger in his face, and it worked.
You're not going to speed
anymore. It works.
We got kids over here.
Exactly. But I would suggest that Sean from Orchard Park try that with Chantrell Henderson.
Sean is probably
your
neighbor.
Wave your finger like this to Chantrell Henderson or one of the speeders.
He's probably one of your neighbors.
Yeah, maybe it's my neighborhood he's talking about. All right, we're out of our neighborhood. We're going outside the neighborhood now, joined on our regular Tuesday visit by the host of ESPN's NFL Live, co-host of Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio and ESPN2. Happy to have Trey Wingo on the show with us. Trey, good afternoon. How are you doing today?
Well, now I want to know who was speeding.
Yeah, me too. Guy called up. I don't want to – we can't spend the whole day on this, but a caller just said he can tell that Bills players, free agents, don't like coming here, don't like staying here because the way they speed through his neighborhood.
Science.
Science! Trey, how'd you like the Bills wild card game? It was wild, no?
It was wild and lacking offense on a lot of efforts.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, if you're a Bills player and you saw that performance out of Blake Bortles, you had to wonder to yourself, what do we need to do to win a game? Because that one had to be a tough one to swallow. I mean, you know, as bad as Blake was, and my God, from a passing perspective, I'm not sure I've ever seen a worse performance in a playoff game. Somehow they found a way to win the game.
That's the thing. That here we are 2 days later, Trey, and Donald wants to weigh in on this too. What bothers me, what haunts me actually 2 days later, is that game was so winnable for the Buffalo Bills, and they just couldn't squeeze a drop, as they say.
Well, you know, look, you go to that first and goal from the one, and it ends up being, what, a 30-plus yard field goal? You had the OPI on the first play and then a sack, and it just, you know, I'm sure Sean McDermott has said this already, but they'd love to take that first play again and just try and pound that rock with the running game. It just did not work in any way, shape, or form.
You know, Trey, we talked about this yesterday. It truly was a run-pass option. At least that's what the players in the locker room said. It was a run-pass option. So Tyrod actually made the right decision. You know, I mean, everybody wants to complain about that one. You brought in Kelvin Benjamin for that reason. The play just wasn't executed.
Yeah, look. That's fair, 100% fair, and you want to have those options. But Kelvin is the biggest guy on the field at that point, and you know it's going to be pretty obvious when he extends those arms.
Oh, yeah.
It was the easiest call the ref could have made. So it was a right call, but you just can't have that blatant of a push off. They're going to call that 100% of the time.
Yeah.
Trey Wingo is our guest, the host of ESPN's NFL Live and their draft coverage, Golic and Wingo, weekdays, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on ESPN2 and the ESPN app. Trey, we're trying to get folks to kind of reflect on the 2016 Buffalo Bills season. You've kind of lived it with us through our Tuesday visits every week. And I wonder, what do you think the best thing Sean McDermott did for this Buffalo Bills team this past year. And, you know, we've got end the playoff drought at the top of the list, but I happen to think that just kind of laying the foundation for a new culture here, a new base of expectations, I think that might be more important than getting to the playoffs and ending that drought. But I'm interested in your thoughts on that.
No, you're right. Look, the foundation has been set. Okay, we know what the Bills are, and we know what they're capable of doing now. And so now we've crossed one drought off the list, first playoff appearance since 1999. Now, obviously, the next one is to check the next thing off the list, which is 1995, the last time the Bills won a playoff game. So, look, I think that there's a belief in this team that they can get things done. Look, some things are going to change, and I think one of those biggest changes might be at the quarterback position. But I think that there's a belief now with the core of that team that, hey, we're good enough to do the things that people have been telling us for a long time we can't do. And that is a powerful thing. You know, I really believe we saw that play out in the national championship game last night between Alabama and Georgia when that freshman came off the bench to Tuatunga-Vailoa and you know, made some plays, and suddenly Alabama was like, hey, we can play offense. We can score points.
Right.
And that worked for them, and I think that's going to be the process going forward for the Buffalo Bills. But they are going to have to deal with the biggest issue in the room, and that'll be quarterback.
Trey, we're definitely going to talk to you a little bit because you were down in Atlanta, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
You guys were down there. But I just want to talk to you about the national perception now. We were just talking about this, the national perception of this organization now. For a long time, people said, well, the Bills don't know what they're doing up there. They keep making all of these different moves, all of that stuff. And then everybody kind of changed once they hired Coach McDermott. And you can see things on the uptick until he made the move, switched the quarterback. Nathan Peterman throws 5 interceptions, which you couldn't imagine he would have had a game like that. Then everybody's like, see, the Bills still don't know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Has that national perception, in your opinion, changed a little bit?
It has. It has. Look, there's a sense now that the Bills can compete. Now, look, I'm not going to sit here and say that next year we're going to say the Bills are favored to win the division.
Right,
I think that's
right.
Still going to be the Patriots. But I think that there's a sense that they have found a way to get into the postseason, and now let's build on that. What is everybody's Don, when you were playing, what was the number one goal? Let's win our division, right? That's number one goal. Let's win our division and take it from there and build from there.
Right.
Okay, so I'm sure that's going to be the attitude going into the 2018 regular season in Buffalo. And, you know, it's not that unreasonable when you think about the things that may or may not be happening in New England. And, you know, I'm sorry, at some point, Tom Brady is going to start looking old. I don't know when that is, but I believe it's nearer in the nearer future than it is in the more distant future, and these are things that they're going to have to take advantage of. But the number one priority for the Bills in this offseason is getting a consensus and a decision on what they're going to do with the quarterback position going forward.
We're with Trey Wingo from ESPN talking about the Bills and the rest of the playoffs. And I wonder, you saw the game, the Jaguars' immediate future. It's hard to imagine them winning again, even competing again with getting the kind of quarterback play they got last Sunday, isn't it, Trey?
It is, but then again, you remember Week 5, Blake Bortles in Pittsburgh went 8 of 14 for 95 yards, and they won 30-9. Now, a large part because Ben was a mess in that game. He was 33 of 55, I think, for 300 yards, but no touchdowns and 5 interceptions. And Leonard Fournette ran for, 180-plus in that game. I don't expect those two things to happen again, but I do expect Blake to play about that way. And if Blake plays 8 of 14 for less than 100 yards, yeah, I'm banking a large amount of my goodwill and maybe a little cash that the Pittsburgh Steelers will find a way to win that game. And they're going to have the same issue going forward as the Bills. I mean, that's the really interesting thing, is both these teams are very similar in terms of really good defenses. You know, a good coach that's gotten in there sort of changed the culture, a solid running game, but the passing game is the problem for both of them. You know, they picked up the fifth-year option in Jacksonville on Blake Bortles, and I'm still not sure if he's going to be back there in 2018.
Yeah, you're right. And everybody here wants to get on talking about Tyrod Taylor and you know, Murph and I are going to talk about him a lot over the next couple of months. What's your thoughts on Tyrod Taylor and what they should do? Should they keep Tyrod Taylor here and draft one? Do you think they should bring one of these free agents that are out here on the streets? What's your opinion on Tyrod Taylor and his future?
Well, look, I thought all of this year he was the best option. And, you know, we talked about that before and after the game in San Diego, almost said it, in Los Angeles against the Chargers, where I could not understand how people could think it would be in the best interest of the team playing Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa to put the less mobile quarterback in. So we can get around the numbers, which say the passing game was terrible this year, and it was. I think they were dead last in terms of touchdowns, yards, and receptions for wide receivers. So obviously something needs to change there. I just thought that doing it in that game did not make any sense. Now going forward, do we believe we have something in Nathan Peterman? Clearly Sean McDermott and the staff felt strong enough to make that change in what was a very unusual game for a lot of us on the outside. But I think that change is coming. Whether or not you or I believe that Tyrod should be there, I think they don't believe that he's going to be the future going forward based on everything we've seen. So I think there's going to be a change of quarterback for the Bills, and they're going to try and either go with Nathan Peterman and believe they have something there or try and bring somebody else in.
Hey, Trey, the Tennessee Titans move on. They get to take a crack at New England, but I'm interested in the team they left behind, Kansas City. What do you make of the Kansas City Chiefs and their repeated playoff failures? How does that happen year after year to them?
Well, I tell you, it was really startling when you looked at some of the numbers that came out of that game. Look, first of all, give Tennessee all the credit in the world. They did what they had to do. But once Travis Kelce went out, it was a completely different ballgame. Alex Smith had 154 passing yards in the first quarter, and I think he finished with 250-something for the entire game. The other thing is Kareem Hunt had 6 rushes in the first quarter in that game. He had 5 over the final 3 quarters, most of those without Travis Kelce in the game. That's inexcusable. That's inexcusable for the coaching staff to call plays like that. And the other thing, which was just shocking when you looked at it, only 4 times in modern NFL history, by modern we're being very loose, as in going back to 1933. Okay, since 1933, there have only been 4 times in a playoff game where a team has had an 18-point lead or bigger at the half and lost, and Andy Reid has 2 of those. Mm-hmm. A playoff game a couple of years ago in Indianapolis, when I believe they were up 38-10, I think it was, or some ridiculous number, and they came back and lost that one, and then what happened on Saturday. And even crazier, it was 2 straight playoff games, because that was the situation in Super Bowl 51, where the Falcons had a big lead on the Patriots, and they lost that one. And the very next playoff game was Kansas City hosting Tennessee, and they lost that one. So we can dance around a million things, but at the end of the day, that can't happen. And when it's the rest of the NFL since 1933, too, and your head coach, too, over the last 4 playoff seasons, that's a real problem. Now, I don't think Andy Reid is going anywhere, but I think there will be changes in Kansas City for sure.
Now, one of those changes is something that I'm sure Bills fans will pay attention to, and it's the quarterback situation out there. Obviously, you saw the young rookie quarterback come in the game, have a good game. Alex Smith was playing early in the season like an MVP. He played later in the season a lot better. Midway through the season, he wasn't playing that well. We know he threw over 4,000 yards this year, but still people want to say that he needs to be out of Kansas City. What's your thoughts on that situation?
Well, I think he is going to be out of Kansas City, and I don't think he should be. I mean, in terms of based on his play. They drafted up to get Pat Mahomes at 12 in the draft, for a reason. They made that big jump for a reason. They love that kid. They think he's going to be a superstar. Now, Alex Smith, I just want to put this in some side of context. I don't think in any way, shape, or form he was the reason they lost that game. Mm-hmm. They took away their most dynamic weapon in the passing game, Travis Kelce. And they struggled, and I think they struggled more because of the play calling than anything else in terms of Kansas City. But let's just put into context what we're talking about here. We all believe that, or a lot of people believe that Tyrod's probably gone from Buffalo, correct? I think that's a sort of a consensus, right? Wouldn't we agree with that?
I would agree with that, yeah.
Okay, so the Bills were 32nd in terms of the NFL in passing yards, receptions, and touchdowns from wide receivers. Alex Smith is in all likelihood going to be gone from Kansas City, and he had his best passing yard season ever, 4,000, completed 67.5% of his passes, second best in his career behind only 2012 when he only played 10 games for the San Francisco 49ers, had the most touchdown passes in his career, 26, and the best touchdown-to-interception ratio in his career, 26-5. And somehow that guy is going to be run out of town based on fans' perception and the fact that they drafted up to get Patrick Mahomes. Alex Smith is going to be a very, very good quarterback next year for somebody that's going to take him. And it might be a guy like him ends up in Buffalo.
Interesting. Trey, we thank you for this. We'll talk next week about the division around games. And thanks very much for joining us here today. We appreciate it.
Yes. No speeding, guys. Remember, no speeding in Orchard Park.
Never speed in OP. Thank you, Trey. Trey Wingo, host of ESPN NFL Live, co-host of Golic and Wingo, 6 a.m., 10 a.m. on ESPN Radio, ESPN2, and streaming live on the ESPN app. Trey joined us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, Subway Eat Fresh. Back with more in a moment, the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back, John Murphy, Donald Jones from our One Buffalo studio, the front end of the AdPro Sports Training Center. And across the way, over in the parking lot, they're getting set up for the season-ending wrap-up news conference from Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott. Following that, we'll get Brandon Bean live in studio with us here today. We've got Steve Tasker stopping by the show today as well. And we're going to hear from you, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Trying to engage you on what is the best thing. He did a lot of good things, but what's the best thing Sean McDermott did this season with the Buffalo Bills? Ken calling from Buffalo. Hi, Ken. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Well, thanks for having me, and I like our new coach. The only thing I didn't like about him was pulling Tyrod, and I think he succumbed to public opinion in that move, and I think it was a great move that he changed his mind and realized he's the coach, and he's the boss. And
well, you know, Ken, I think public opinion was kind of split on that move back on second week in November. Don't you, Donald? Everybody wasn't clamoring for Nathan Peterman. Some people were upset about that move. We did shows about it all week. From what I could tell, Donald, it was almost 50-50. Some people liked the quarterback move.
Some fans.
That's true. But if you recall, the Coach McDermott said he was going to stick with Tyrod Sunday and Monday. And then after the newscasters were making fun of him of saying that we're going to stick with Tyrod forever, then he changed his mind.
No, Ken, I don't think that's the way it happened. And I certainly
it was.
No, I disagree. Donald, you want to say something here?
I think it's my go. Who runs the show?
Right there.
Sticking with Tyrod a long time. Remember three games of losing? And then finally, for some reason, he changed, but he didn't.
No. They had lost two, including the bad loss to New Orleans and then the championship. Let's let Donald weigh in.
I mean, I think Coach McDermott made the move because he felt it was the best for the team. That was it. It wasn't anybody outside perception or any of that stuff. That's really all that matters, you know? I mean, well, and he actually he stood up there after he made the move and said, you know, he didn't say we made a mistake, you know, but he actually took all of the questions, he answered them, and he switched back, you know. So I don't think you can really say anything bad about his decision and the fact that he was okay with switching back and the fact that the team actually stuck behind him after the entire decision.
I think it was a miscalculation.
You can say that.
They were, 5-4 at the time and in position to finish with a playoff spot with a long way to go. The move backfired, you know, with the 5 first-half interceptions, and he went back, you know, changed it again. But it had nothing to do with newscasters or public opinion. I guarantee you Coach McDermott pays no attention to newscasters.
None. I mean,
or public opinion.
If that was the case, just think about after they traded Sammy away and all that stuff. I mean, he doesn't care about any of that stuff.
He doesn't. We're going to hear from him, though, in a couple of minutes here. We're going to take a break here and come back at the top of the hour. We will have live the news conference, Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean, the Bills GM. Plus, Brandon Bean's going to join us live here in studio, so come on back. John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
The update from One Bills Drive, where we are moments away from the season-ending wrap-up news conference from Bills head coach Sean McDermott and general manager Brandon Bean. We'll carry that for you live here on our show as the two of them sit down and answer questions from the media about the plan, the process moving forward. After the news conference, at some point, probably closer to 2, Brandon Bean, Bills GM, will join us live here in studio. We'll talk with him about what is going on with the Bills moving into the offseason. Around the NFL, Carolina Panthers quarterback Cam Newton will have a new offensive coordinator and a new position coach next year. Panthers head coach Ron Rivera fired offensive coordinator Mike Shula and quarterbacks coach Ken Dorsey today, 2 days after he said he didn't plan any changes to his staff. Shula's been the Panthers' offensive coordinator since 2013. Dorsey's been the quarterback's coach for the last five seasons. They are gone now from Carolina. The Chicago Bears named Kansas City Chiefs offensive coordinator Matt Nagy as their new head coach. That announcement came late yesterday. Nagy, just 39 years old, replaces John Fox, who was fired after posting a 14-34 record over three seasons. Nagy spent the last 10 years coaching under Andy Reid in Philadelphia and in Kansas City. Hockey tonight, the Buffalo Sabres finally back home for a game against the Winnipeg Jets. 7 o'clock faceoff at the KeyBank Center. Brendan Gooley appeared in his first three NHL games in December last year, and now the Sabres' second-round pick in the 2015 entry draft. He has 20 points and a team high, or 20 points, yeah, and a team high 91 shots in 35 games with the Amherst. He will make his season debut at home tonight. He and goaltender Linus Allmark called up from Rochester yesterday. College basketball, the high-flying UB Bulls take their unbeaten conference record on the road to Akron tonight. UB is 2-0, 10-5 overall. They play their first game against the MAC East with a road game tonight at Akron. And Nick Saban says he won't spend much time reflecting on his latest national championship, his fifth at Alabama. Said he plans on coming back, though. Alabama beat Georgia in overtime last night, 26-23, in the college football national championship game. And that is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones, hour number two of the show. We're here until 3 today. Steve Tasker standing by. He's going to join us in the third and final hour of the show. As we said, Brandon Bean, the Bills general manager, will join us in studio after his news conference, which is moments away. And we will... we'll carry that news conference for you live. Donald, what do you hope to hear from the coach and GM today? What do you expect to hear from them today?
I think we all would love to hear what's your thoughts on Tyrod Taylor. Yeah. What's your thoughts on, you know, some of the players? Have you talked to Kyle Williams yet? Has he decided on if he's coming back? I think the honest answer is I don't really expect to hear much of anything because I think they still need to sit down and evaluate everything. I think that they want to talk about every single player on this team, starting with the free agents. You got to figure out what's going on with those guys from this team. And let's hear what we'll
Yeah, let's
we'll
go see. To the podium across the way in the media room with the head coach and the general manager talking to the media.
Okay, we'll go ahead and get started. I want to start off by saying a few words, just really reaching out to our fan base and thanking them for their support all throughout the year. Incredible year. And the energy around this city and the energy around our fan base was just phenomenal throughout the season. I thought, you know, just it helped us get through some of the highs and lows of the season, and it was great to see everyone show up in Jacksonville the way they did. This has been an entirely team effort from the start, and the entire building has been on board, and also wanted to show our appreciation to Terry and Kim for their support throughout the season. And with that, I'll turn it over to Brandon.
Yeah, you know, to echo what Sean said, you know, I don't really talk during the season, but, man, how impressed I was with this fan base, the passion. You kind of knew it from afar. You know what you're walking into. But until you experience what it was like this season, you know, we had some very good moments. We had our low moments when we lost three in a row. But just the passion and, you know, the outpouring of just – you saw some of the videos, you know, from our locker room to the fans showing up at -3 or -4, whatever it was, when we landed back from Miami. Man, it's emotional to even talk about – you see what it means. And our guys saw that and felt it, and I definitely thought everyone, as Sean said, it was a team effort, and that includes the fans as well. And, you know, I'd be remiss without saying – I thought Sean and his staff did one heck of a job. You know, we threw some curveballs with some of the trades in August and, you know, even the one during the season or two, you know, bringing Kelvin here. But to go through all that, to handle the three-game losing streak and get this team into the playoffs says a lot about what he and his staff and these players did. And it was fun to be a part of. And, you know, as we – I know we're going to open up to questions – I'll just hit it off early before you guys start. We are literally just evaluating. Spent all day yesterday talking with players, trying to get just some recon of plans for them, off-season feedback. And Sean and I are going to really sit down over the next few days and start evaluating a lot of the things that happened this year and how we're going to take it going forward. So with that, I'll leave it open to questions.
Hey, Brandon. Obviously, as the season's going along, you're thinking long-term for 2018, you're setting it up. But by what happened here at the end of the year, and you making the playoffs, and the script kind of got flipped a little bit, did that change anything in how you're thinking about 2018 based on just the fact that you did make the playoffs this year?
No, you know, we have a long way to go. We really do. We have a lot of work to do. We're trying to compete and win every day. We really are. I know we said it, and people drew their own conclusions of what, you know, our strategy was or what this team was or was not going to be. The great thing was this team defined itself in their prep every day on and off the field to get the results. Our plan has not changed. You know, the only thing that gets adjusted is, you know, you don't know where you're going to draft each year. You know, it's a great thing to be drafting 21, you know, and we got Kansas City's pick, which is 22. You draft in the 20s, you made the playoffs. That's the goal, because if you get in, you have a chance.
Brandon, along those lines, though, the big questions are, well, it's about quarterback, and are you satisfied with how this offense produced with Tyrod Taylor running the show?
We're not satisfied with the whole offense. It's not, and it wasn't just about Tyrod, you know. There's a lot of hands in the cookie jar, so to speak. And, you know, Sean and I, we're going to talk about everything. And we know we have to get better on offense, on defense, on special teams. We are far from a finished product. I don't know if you're ever going to hear us say we're a finished product. But we have a lot of work to do, and we know that. And that's going to get started pretty quickly after this press conference.
Brandon, in your opinion, does Tyrod Taylor have the ability to make the type of throws and the range of throws consistently that an NFL quarterback, that a championship caliber NFL quarterback?
Tyrod has a lot of ability. He really does. And we saw some of those things. He did a lot of good things this year. But he'll tell you he's got weaknesses to work on, just like a lot of other guys. And the great thing about Tyrod, you can never question his work ethic. The guy is in here early, often he's watching film, he's stretching, he's in with the trainer. He does so many good things. He gives himself the best chance to succeed on the field by what he does off. And I know he knows the areas he's got to work on. I have no doubt he's going to continue to improve.
Sean, did we jump the gun on when you went to Nathan in the Chargers game? Did we as media fans jump the gun thinking that you had concluded that maybe Tyrod is not going to be? I mean, circumstances has changed, but did we jump the gun there thinking that you've already made your mind up on Tyrod?
Well, I guess that's your decision. That's your call. I know why we did what we did. And, you know, Brandon and I sat down that week and discussed what was in the best interest of this football team, like we do with every decision we make. And we felt the right decision at that time for this football team.
Was there really any coming back from that in your mind? Yes, you did go back to him, but when you make a change like that with an established starter, you'd understand why there would be the assumption that you really sort of moved on from him, but circumstances forced you to put him back and go against what you really wanted to do.
I get that. I understand where you're coming from on that. You know, again, that's you know, you're going to draw your conclusions like you did earlier in the year. You're going to draw your conclusions now. The best I can tell you is we're always going to do what we feel is best for this football team, this organization, and we'll continue to do that moving forward and actively pursue the vision for this football team.
Sean, will Rick Dennison return as your offensive coordinator next season?
Yeah, you know, Jay, I think Brandon mentioned this a few minutes ago. This is early in the process right now. I'm not going to get into speculation, and that's what that is, speculation on coaches or players and their future as Buffalo Bills.
Brandon, how concerned are the Bills, especially the Pegulas, about the accusations against Richie Incognito, and what investigation, if any, are the Bills doing?
Anytime you have an accusation like that, you take it very seriously. And, you know, we have spoken to Richie, and we understand his side of the story. And I know Richie is trying to, you know, reach out to the other young man that was involved. You know, from what I understand, it was a little bit of on-the-field stuff back and forth. I know there's one accusation. We're looking into it. I've spoken with the league. We're going to, you know, follow protocol, and that's really where it's at.
How does the fact that it's incognito make it even more serious? This is probably the one player in the league that can least get in this kind of trouble.
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, again, we're still gathering the facts. So until we really know what happened, you know, from all sides of the story, that's kind of where we're at, Jerry.
What has been Richie's side of the story?
I'd really rather keep that. You know, it's the league's doing their investigation. We understand his side and some of the other guys that heard, but until we get it finalized, I don't really want to comment.
Is it fair to say, though, that something occurred as opposed to him not saying anything and having complete innocence here?
There was definitely an exchange. You know, I think there's misunderstanding of what was said, but that's where it's at.
You said you weren't pleased with the offense as a whole. How much of that falls on players? How much of that falls on Rick Dennis and the coordinator?
It falls on us all. You know, it falls on me and to provide players. You know, Sean's going to take his share of it. Coaching, players. You know, this was a new scheme, a new year, a lot of new parts. There were some returning parts, but there was a lot of new things here. I thought they really did some good things. We just could never, you know, we could never get on track consistently, and that's what we got to be. We got to be more consistent in a lot of areas, and that's part of the evaluation process. How do we do that?
One of the big questions, well, I don't know, it seems like a no-brainer to me, but if Kyle Williams wants to come back, and he said he wants his people to talk to your people kind of thing.
Right.
I mean, is that a no-brainer where there is a desire, given what his stature is and how he played, of bringing him back?
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't love Kyle Williams? I mean, I got nothing but positive to say about Kyle. And, you know, to see that moment in the locker room I referred to earlier, him and his sons and just what that meant and what Kyle's meant to this city, he is a big-time leader. And I had a good conversation with him yesterday. I know Sean had a conversation. He was a big part of the leadership, not only on our defense, but of our team. So you definitely would want that back. But it's a two-way thing. You know, he's going to reflect. I know he's heading home to Louisiana. He's either on his way or he's already there. But we'll give him time to just sit back. After a long season, a long career, he needs to sit back. And at the right time, we'll get together. But we definitely love to have Kyle back.
Brandon, since you arrived, you talked about wanting to win now and in the future.
Yeah.
You were able to get a lot of playing time for the rookie draft class. Does that excel kind of the future and the process, if you will?
You know, it's exciting that a lot of young guys played. We were following through the year how many young guys we had playing rookies versus what other teams were doing. And our guys were trending very high compared to the league. And there's no substitute for playing time in real games. And not only did we get real games, we got a postseason game. And you can't simulate postseason experience. So for these young guys, and they played significant minutes, not only in the year, but in that game. So that's huge as we build this thing going forward.
On the flip side, you also had one of the oldest rosters in the NFL. How much does that concern you in trying to build what you're trying to do long term?
I mean, that is something that we noticed going into the year where we're at, and that's part of the process. No matter what our record was, whether we won the Super Bowl or whether we didn't win a game, was we know we have to get younger in a lot of positions. Again, it takes time, but we're going to look at every avenue from the draft to free agency, guys on the street. We're going to do what we can to get better at each position.
Sean, you were asked specifically about Rick Dennison and his future. What about your – does that apply to your whole staff? Are you giving evaluation to all the assistant coaching positions?
That's correct, yeah. You know, Vic, we're going to look at everything. That's what we've got to do. You know me by now. I'm a methodical guy in my approach and our approach, and you know, we're going to take a hard look at everything and make sure we're doing the right thing moving forward.
Well, Sean,
there's no game to look forward to, and not giving away secrets. How limited was Calvin Benjamin this year? He got hurt, and you guys made the trade for him, thinking he was going to be a beast. Can you tell us now just how limited he really was? It didn't seem like he was himself.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be lying if I said he was himself. He was 100%. He wasn't. You know, this will be a big offseason for Kelvin. Brandon and I both know, and I think people around the league know, when healthy, what Kelvin's capable of doing. Unfortunately, he wasn't healthy, you know, in particular after that Chargers game, I think after that first drive, first quarter, somewhere in there. But I tell you what, the young man toughed it out, and I think there was some leadership shown by him doing that. So, you know, this will be a big offseason for Kelvin. I know he's anxious to get started, and we're anxious to see him get healthy and come back ready to go.
And Sean, speaking of injuries, what about, can you clear the air on what the deal was with Cordy and whether this thing can ever be repaired, given how many times he's seen Andrews?
Yeah, I don't really think there's any air to clear, other than the fact that he's had a successful operation procedure, and he's currently rehabbing and getting himself ready for a great offseason. I think there's a lot of energy, positive energy around Cordy, and I know more than anything he wanted to be out there down the stretch here with his teammates.
Sean, in respect to Vic's question, when it comes to going through the paces of evaluating your coaching staff, it's also a time in the NFL where teams are turning over their coaching staffs as well, and there's a lot of quick decisions being made. How much time can you afford to take if you were to make a change and potentially miss out on somebody?
Yeah, I mean, this is a challenging time of year because of what you just talked about, Joe. There's not only individuals, there's families behind these individuals this time of year. And being responsible and making smart decisions for our football team is what we do and what we're all about. So, yes, there is a time element to this and the evaluations around certain parts of it. That said, we've got to make sure they're well thought through decisions, whether it's personnel or anything we do, schematics, whatever it is.
Sean, a lot of the players this year talked about how this was maybe the closest team that they had ever been on. How do you balance that or not let it cloud your judgment when it comes to making tough personnel decisions, in the sense that you know those guys fit well in the room and that there is a good mix, but maybe you need to upgrade, or maybe you feel like you need upgrades at certain spots? How do you not let that cloud your judgment?
Yeah, I mean, it's a challenge, no doubt about it. That said, I've been around, I've had a chance to be around, fortunately, Brandon and I, some successful teams before. This was, to your point, one heck of a football team, one heck of a team when you just take the football part out of it. I think, when you look at the way these guys sacrificed for one another, they were very unselfish in their approach. They fought through adversity. But making smart decisions is about making unemotional decisions at the same time, and that's what we've got to do.
Brandon, does the organization support Richie at this point?
Yeah, we're always going to support our players. Again, we're still in the fact-finding part of the investigation.
Should there be any reason for anyone to doubt that this could lead to him not coming back with the Bills?
Yeah, I mean, it's really early, so for me, it would totally be speculation, to be honest with you.
Brandon, you were here last day one when you walked into now, made the playoffs your first year. Has the track gone faster than you anticipated when you got your day one?
No, because I didn't put an expectation. You guys asked, and Sean was probably asked at a separate time, what record do you expect? Do you make the playoffs or not? And what we were looking for was to set a foundation of what type of team we want, what type of players we want. And, in such a short time, that's the thing I thought we did even faster than I thought of. Sean got these guys and his staff gelling and playing at a maximum level. And they did that. That's what we have to try and build going forward. We have to try and improve our roster in a lot of different areas, and we know that. That plan has not changed, but we have to make sure we're getting our type of guys that fit the culture as we build this, into something bigger.
Sean, you were hired a year ago. Brandon, same question. Did you feel the track was faster than maybe you anticipated back in January?
The track in terms of
how this season progressed? You made the playoffs your first year. Did it go a little bit faster than you thought it would have gone?
Well, I would say in a lot of areas we're on schedule, if that's what you're looking for, really, Sal. In other areas, we've got a lot of work to do. I saw flashes at times of this thing getting turned in the right direction, but we have to actively, like I mentioned earlier, pursue the vision. We're not there yet. There's a whole nother level, and one of the biggest challenges around professional sports, and I'll speak to football, what I've observed is to sustain success, because each year is different, one from the next. Each team is different. And so the decisions we make roster-wise, personnel-wise, as we move forward, will be key in trying to build off of what we did this year. That in and of itself is a challenge.
Sean,
Sean, you were hired a year ago this week. The difference is you didn't have a staff yet. You had to assemble that. You had to get to know players. What is the value going to be for you to be here now, already understanding all that, and going into this offseason with really essentially an extra few months on your hands?
I mean, you get a better feel just being around. Get a better feel, number one, for our whereabouts, our city, our fans. I think I was asked that question last week of if I really understood, and I think that understanding's at a whole another level at this point with our passionate fan base. Also, being around now for a second go around, as you mentioned, Sal got hired. I believe it was about this week or maybe this Friday, a year ago. I'm anxious to build on what we did. Second year through it for me as a head coach, you know, there's a lot I want to improve on as well, and not only in what I do, but also our procedure, our approach. And you guys know me; I've taken a lot of notes. And we're going to vet through those notes and make sure we're doing everything at a certain type of level, a standard, and that's a standard of winning. And I think our team, the players that left yesterday, really personified that and helped us to establish a standard around here of what winning looks like.
I know about speculation or evaluation, you're doing it, but you do have the NFL's leading tackler, Preston Brown, whose contract's coming up. You got Lorenzo Alexander at an advanced age. Just how much are those thoughts in this? And Sean, maybe you could weigh on this as well, because it's those are two big chunks of your linebacker of a position for you.
Yeah, those guys played, you know, in every game and did a very good job. And again, we have a lot of parts to evaluate, with obviously those being one of them. Again, until we sit back and talk through it, and it's a layered approach to our evaluation. We're going to talk to assistant coaches. We're going to talk to our medical staff, our training, you know, our strength and condition. There'll be a lot of parts. What did our personnel guys see that are not involved in the meeting room? So we're going to take our time. It's going to happen. I mean, it'll happen fast, but we're going to be very thorough. Again, those guys will definitely be a big, you know, big questions we got to answer.
Are you still looking for that profile that you had in Carolina? Do you feel you had those kinds of linebackers that fit a specific prototype for you and your defense?
I thought our linebackers did a nice job. I thought Coach Babich, who's a veteran linebacker coach, really established a way of doing things with the position group. And as you saw over time, their production increased. You know, we're like anything, we're going to look to improve in each way we can, every way we can. You know, if we didn't, we wouldn't be doing our job. So, you know, there's a lot of good that came out of this year. That position in particular, I thought, did some good things. And my hat goes off to those guys.
Hey, Sean, just kind of a follow-up to what you touched on before. You said you evaluate everything. I assume that means yourself, too. What do you take out of this year as a head coach? Maybe what you've learned about the process or whatever, the experience moving forward?
Well, I think that the game's always changing, right? And as a head coach, there's a lot that goes into it. You know, my whole goal, my whole approach as a person and as a coach is to be better today than I was yesterday. And that's a process. And so that's the first thing I do after every game is look at myself and hold myself accountable. And I hope hold myself to a level that the players can see and everyone around this building can see, and that we're all the same. You know, that we're all on the same level. We all hold each other accountable. Good things happen.
Are there specific areas, though? Specifics where you might have said, well, something hits you maybe differently than you expected it to, and a lesson maybe you learned or whatever?
Yeah, there's tons of lessons. I mean, to go into detail, I don't know if we have that type of time right now, but I would just say one of the latest things was a great reminder of what playoff football is all about and the fundamentals around playoff football. And I think we learned some lessons in a pretty energetic environment in Jacksonville, just to name a few there, that playoff football and winning playoff football is there's lessons in there and around there. So, the fundamentals around that, that show up. And you see that through the different games this time of year, that it's about, in a large part, about fundamentals.
Brandon, as you go through your evaluation, and should you determine that maybe you need an upgrade at quarterback, do you feel you have enough arsenal in your arsenal, draft picks, to make whatever moves you need to come April?
Yeah, I mean, the good thing is we have a lot of draft capital. And we can stay there and pick. We can move up. We can move back. We can do a lot of different things. It's so early in the process. I mean, we've seen these college guys on the field, but we've yet to meet any of them and to know who they are. And, you know, you rank these guys what you see on the film, but until you know them and know how they know the game and all that, you know, talking about the quarterback position, there's so many layers of what it takes to play quarterback in this league, and we've talked about them, that we're still a long way to go. So, you know, it's too early for me to answer what we would do, whether we do it or not. But, yes, we will go where we need to go to get the right players.
You weren't here for the height of free agency last year. Just what is your general overall philosophy about free agency in terms of upgrading your roster, whether you're talking big spending or responsible spending, fill in the back half of your roster, that kind of stuff?
I like your word, responsible spending. And that is trying to plug holes where you can. You know, it's kind of a moving puzzle, because what happens is you have your UFAs right now, but those change. Teams re-sign guys. Then you add in teams make cap moves. They cap casualties. Okay, I didn't realize this guy was going to. We have some guys flagged that could be potential cap casualties, but until those moves happen, you don't know. So it's kind of a moving piece, but until you get to free agency, sometimes you really don't know the dollars. You price where you think these guys are going to be. Sometimes they price themselves out. Sometimes you go, wow, this guy's a little cheaper than we thought. Let's try and hone in on him. So we'll have targets when the time, you know, is right. We've already started that process, and we'll try to fill as many holes as we can, which helps us in the draft.
Part of the whole Richie thing, at least one Jaguar player tweeted that it was coached, the chirping that's done in the course of a game, making it pretty clear that from your end, from your coaching staff end, that this was coached of your players. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, you know what? They won the game, and the whole situation to me is very unfortunate, Vic, and I'll just leave it at that.
When it comes to the decision,
talking about time and money, is there a cap that you have in regards to the amount of money you would spend on the quarterback position?
No. I mean, at the end of the day, we'll spend what we need to spend. The key is to make wise, spend wisely. And so, certain guys you got to pay up here. Certain guys you got to pay down here. Whether it's the quarterback, running back, defensive end, whatever position you name, you know, you just have that limit. What you got to be able to do is set where you think this guy belongs and not get caught in chase mode, which can happen. I've been a part of that.
Sean, when it comes to Brian Gain, was great.
I'm trying to ask a question.
Sorry about that.
When it comes to the evaluation and decision on Rick Dennison, I'm curious how much you involve Brandon in the sense that you guys kind of want to have a vision for that offense and want to kind of be in lockstep with it.
Well, at the end of the day, that's going to be, like all decisions as it relates to the coaching staff, my decision. But Brandon and I communicate on a lot of things, and so evaluations are a part of that. The reason we do that is we're building this thing together. We are aligned philosophically on how we believe it should look and how we believe the building process should basically take shape. And so I'm not going to hold that away from Brandon, and so we communicate on a lot of things.
How much does the quarterback decision tie into that in terms of, you know, you want to, you know, if you don't know who the quarterback is, it's hard to know who you want your offensive coordinator to be, type of thing. How much are those kind of going hand in hand?
Well, there's certainly a connection there. That said, at the end of the day, good coaches are good teachers, and so that's where you start. And you really take it from there.
Hey, Sean, in a perfect world, which is not, but in a perfect world, this offseason, at the quarterback position, if you get a guy in the first round that you do love, is it your – I want to get your thoughts first, Sean. Would it be your preference to have, whether it's Tyrod or a bridge veteran, like Andy Reid did in Kansas City, be that guy this year, for this coming year, and let that rookie simmer for a year? In a perfect world, you get your guy, and you get a veteran guy, whether it's Tyrod or somebody else. What would you prefer to do? And if you could have that to based on?
Yeah, I mean, look, in a perfect world, I don't know, like you said, I don't know if that exists. Every situation is a little bit different, Sal. So, you know, every situation being what it is, you certainly ideally at every position, and we experience this where we've been. You'd like to have a veteran in the room for a lot of reasons, one of which is experience on the field, another of which is leadership, the intangibles that go with some of these veteran players. I think you saw us do that at points this year. In the way we've built it up to this point in time. So there's value in that, but every situation is just a little bit different.
Brandon, can you confirm that Brian Dean?
Yeah, you know, I got you next. Yeah, you know, a couple of names that come to mind while Sean was answering, you got Peyton Manning who played immediately, and you got Aaron Rodgers who didn't play immediately. I think every situation is unique, and so you have to consider your situation. But as Sean said, you're looking to always surround with leaders and guys who've been there before, whether that guy's playing on the field or whether he's just helping, you know, in the classroom, you know, and on the field. So every situation's different. We would just – we'll make the best decisions for us, you know, as we go forward.
Just the report of Brian Gain interviewing for the Texans GM job, can you confirm you did grant that permission to them?
Yes, we did grant that, and, you know, we'll see what happens.
Thank you.
Just one more if I could. Okay.
All right. Very good. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
There you go. There is Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott wrapping up their season-ending wrap-up news conference over in the media room. John Murphy and Donald Jones back here at One Bills Drive. Trying to dig out news nuggets. Brandon Bean said we have a long way to go. He said not satisfied with the offense or really any entire unit on the team. Bean said we do have a lot of parts to evaluate, and it is very, very early in the draft process. No decisions made on personnel evaluating the roster. No decision made on Tyrod Taylor's future at quarterback. Sean McDermott said no decision on coaching staff changes made yet as well. It's important to note, Donald, you know, these are mandatory season-ending wrap-up news conferences. They have to do this.
Yes.
Each team will do it at the end of the year. The Bills did it last year as well, even without a head coach in place. And so they come out here today to fulfill that requirement without really having a whole lot to say, but we do all anticipate there will be some changes coming up and over the next several months and in personnel especially, you know, free agent decisions and draft decisions, obviously.
I mean, it's inevitable. Teams that win the Super Bowl have changes. So unless you won the Super Bowl, you're going to look at your team and say, okay, we need to get better here. We need to get better here. That's just what it is. And that's not just players. That's coaches. I mean, they're going to evaluate everything, and they have to. I mean, Brandon Bean might evaluate his staff after their – I mean, that's just how – this thing works. Everybody gets that evaluation. I would think that they would want to evaluate the coaches, and then the coaches have to sit down together, evaluate the team. It is, you know, we all get tired of hearing the word process, but it is a process. It's a long process. Brandon Bean, and we're going to get him in to talk to him. This is, as I was saying earlier, this is his season. It's vamping up for him now because he has to look at pro players and draft guys now. He'll be out on the road a lot, I'm sure. It's an exciting process for him, I'm sure.
Yeah, and while they will be deliberate about it, they don't have a whole lot of time. And as somebody pointed out, I thought pretty astutely, you know, the landscape changes with the – I think Sean talked about it, the coaching moves that go around the league. You got to be, you know, light on your feet, as they say, ready to move. If somebody, you know, goes after your coach or if you want to go after somebody else's assistant coach.
Right.
Same thing in personnel, too. If Brian Gain leaves as, you know, vice president of the player personnel year – they're going to have to be ready with his replacement, ready to replace him. So it is all in a state of flux. We're going to get Brandon Bean over here in just a couple of minutes, maybe at the top of the hour, maybe sooner, to talk about some of these issues. And so get ready for that. Steve Tasker's joining us at 2 o'clock today. We want to hear from you, too. What is the best thing Sean McDermott has done in his first year as Buffalo Bills head coach? As he said, he is approaching his one-year anniversary since he was hired for the job, got one season under his belt. But what's the best thing Sean McDermott has done as head coach of the Bills? Our Twitter poll is up pretty close. 52% of you say ending the playoff drought. 46% say you think laying the base for a new culture here is the best thing he's done. 2% of you say surviving that three-game losing streak. Let us know what you think. The lines are open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. What is the best thing Sean McDermott has done in his first year as Bills head coach? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show
Okay, thanks for coming back. Long press conference from Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott just wrapped up a couple of minutes ago. We carried it for you. Hope you heard it. Hope you enjoyed it. I'm trying to think, you know, it's not – look, they didn't announce anything major. It's not great radio. But if I'm thinking if I'm a Bills fan and a deep Bills fan and a heavily engaged Bills fan, I want to hear that whole thing. Don't you, Donald? What do you think?
You're hoping that they say something.
I'm asking you a question.
How boring was it?
Slightly.
I think fans here want to hear what they have to say about the season, about free agency, about the team, about the their cap situation. I mean, he started to talk about, you know, there are some guys who are flagged as cap casualties. I mean, I think fans want to hear that stuff.
I think so. I hope so. And I hope you enjoyed it. And we're glad we carried it for you. And the phone lines are open to react to anything you heard. You can react to our Twitter poll, too. We are going to have – you heard from Sean McDermott. We're going to get Sean on the show later this week. But the question on Twitter is, of all the good things that happened that Sean McDermott engineered this year as head coach of the Buffalo Bills, what in your mind was the best? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. I think setting the foundation, laying the foundation – for the culture change that they want to affect here. I think that was the best thing Sean McDermott did. And, in fact, I think it sounds like Brandon Bean agrees with me. Here's what the GM of the Buffalo Bills said when he was asked about what was accomplished this year and the team's long-term goals. Brandon Bean.
What we were looking for was to set a foundation of what type of team we want, what type of players we want. And, you know, in such a short time, that's the thing I thought we – did even faster than I thought of. Sean got these guys and his staff gelling and playing at a maximum level, and they did that. That's what we have to try and build going forward. We have to try and improve our roster in a lot of different areas, and we know that plan has not changed, but we have to make sure we're getting our type of guys that fit the culture as we build this, you know, into something bigger.
And as Brandon Bean said, they're just getting started, too. We have a long way to go. But that's why I think that was the biggest thing accomplished this year, this past year with this group.
The culture?
Setting the foundation
for
the culture change. It's not done yet.
No, it's definitely not done yet. I think you have set the culture when the guys on, and not just the guys, but the players around the building, everybody. If you remember when he first came in, it was playoff caliber, playoff caliber. Well, now that's setting the foundation for how you want to think. But now you have to get to the point where everybody around here has the mentality we're going to be in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Not like we want to end the drought. We hope we can be in the playoffs this year. We don't know if we'll be in the playoffs. You have so many free agents. I mean, what's going to happen next year? All of this stuff. You want to have the mentality we're going to be in the playoffs next year. How do we get over the hump? What do we need to get over the hump to get to the Super Bowl or to win the Super Bowl? I think when you have that mentality, that is when you have officially changed the culture. And there are many teams around the league that feel like we have what it takes to be in the playoffs this year. Now what do we need to get over the hump? What do we have to do to get over the hump to get to the Super Bowl or win the Super Bowl?
Here's a call from Jerry in Clarence. Hello, Jerry. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks, John. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think changing the culture is exactly what he had to do. Getting rid of Marcel Darius, some other wide receivers that take days off, that are paid a lot of money, get rid of those people. And that opens the door for people in the future that probably wouldn't be looking for Buffalo. And now they sit there and say, well, Buffalo, they're a playoff-caliber team, and I wouldn't mind going there. So that's my thoughts on it. Changing the culture was huge.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, Jerry.
That opens the doors for more speeders to come in. I got this question on Twitter. What do you think they were referring to when they mentioned cap casualties? What they're referring to is guys on this team right now and other teams around the league that are – guys that are making a certain amount of money, and when you look at your salary cap situation, you're trying to get lighter so that you can add more talent. So you look at certain guys that might be making a lot of money from the past regime or something like that, that you would say, okay, we could find somebody that's cheaper than this person that can do exactly what this person can do or something like that. And that's around – it's not just this team, but it's around the league. There are guys all around the league that are flagged as, man, that guy's making a lot of money. And they got a younger guy that's playing a lot. They might actually cut that guy, and we might be able to get him here for a cheaper price.
And I think they did a pretty good job. We'll go over some of this with Brandon Bean of being on the lookout for not just the guys were cheap. I mean, they had issues. They had holes to plug. They had injuries they had to fill. And I think they did a really good job, actually, in retrospect and you know, filling them with guys who contributed. I mean, you can go right down the roster. We will when Brandon Bean joins us. Let's squeeze in one more phone call here. It is Fred calling from Rochester. Hi, Fred. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. How you doing? Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I'm a long-time listener and long-time caller, I guess. Just a couple of things. I think that, to end the drought was a major thing. And Sean McDermott, I think, is right on the right path. I'm happy, but I'm not satisfied. And you're hearing this from a guy who went to 4 Super Bowls and watched all 4 Super Bowls. So, if this community, and that was a while ago, I'm old time. But if this community thinks that that's exciting to make the playoffs, if they ever get in a Super Bowl, watch out because the top will fly off of Buffalo. Mm-hmm. That's how excited they get, you know. That's how excited we get, I should say. I also wanted to say or ask, how is Tyrod Taylor? I don't know why they didn't throw a flag on that play. People said that it was a clean play, but I think he, from what I could see, he got strangled. Number one, and number two, he got his head bashed into the ground. And I mean, you go out for a protocol for a concussion, you must have got hit pretty hard, you know. So I don't understand why there wasn't a flag on that.
You know,
the one where he was put in a headlock, basically.
Yeah,
when he was concussed.
Just because you get concussed doesn't mean it was a bad hit.
Right.
You know,
right.
It was an illegal hit. I don't think that was illegal.
It's not. It wasn't helmet to helmet. He actually was tackling him. His arm was obviously around his neck, but that wasn't an illegal tackle. It wasn't like a horse collar tackle or a helmet to helmet with your, you know, with your head to his head or anything like that. That was a legal tackle. I mean, it just – that's football. It's the physical nature of football. And I think we complain so much when certain guys get hit, but especially quarterbacks. They'll take hits and it's like, man, that's illegal. Those guys are playing football too, you know. They know what they're signing themselves up for. That was an actual legal hit.
We're going to break. We got more to come. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts live at One Bills Drive. And this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
We are back. Welcome back to the show. Steve Tasker is going to join us in the next hour, and Brandon Bean standing by to join us, the Bills general manager as well. Want to get a sense from you on what's the best thing Sean McDermott did this past season? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. James on the line from West Henrietta. Go ahead, James.
Yes, you know, John, I agree with you that I think it's the culture of the team that the improvement in culture of the team that is really the key to a lot of successes here. I'm a born and raised Buffalonian. I could go back and tell you about players that were on the Buffalo Bills team that was before this Buffalo Bills team. Guys like Chet Mutrin and George Reiterman and those guys.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that one of the experiences that I had, I was a professional educator. And I think that people have to understand a lot of the dynamics of small groups when a person comes into a certain environment. And getting those things changed is not easy. You have to make decisions. You have to persist in the decisions. And you have to keep pushing. And I think that Sean has done a terrific job this year of getting that done. I like the team as it is now. And I'm watching it since 1960.
Thanks, James. I think you're onto something. And not only did they have to make tough decisions, McDermott and Bean, the group made unpopular decisions when they happened in real time. I mean, you're trading Sammy Watkins?
Yeah.
What?
One of the things that Brandon Bean actually said in the press conference is you have to make unemotional decisions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to be responsible with your spending. I want to talk to him a little bit more about that, but you have to make unemotional decisions. And that's a hard thing to do for he as the general manager and for Coach McDermott, because he's in the locker room with these guys, building a relationship, talking to their families, all of that stuff. And now you have to decide, we got to move on from you, you know, and it's tough to do, I'm sure, for those guys.
Well, you'll have a chance to answer that question, Donald, because Brandon Bean is standing by to join us when we return. We're going to get to the top of the hour when we come back. Bills general manager Brandon Bean live in studio with us. Come on back for that. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This
is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run. Fires down the middle. It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted. Tre Day. Tre'Davious White. He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there. McCoy cuts to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Welcome back to the show, hour three of the show, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy and Donald Jones. Got a full house here. We are joined by Steve Tasker, our usual Tuesday visitor. Great to have you here, Steve.
Tuesday at 2.
Yeah, and on the other side, we've got the general manager of the Buffalo Bills, Brandon Bean, making a return appearance. We haven't seen him since.
He was our usual.
I remember the day. It was 78 degrees in Rochester, a beautiful day, and That's really the last we saw of you, Brandon.
No, I know. It was that weather. We long for that weather.
I do.
Now,
right now, I do. Hey, first of all, congratulations. You got this playoff monkey, the drought off your back, and among all the other things that it accomplished, just to not have to talk about that after today probably has got to feel pretty good.
It does. You know, I mentioned in my press conference, just it was so neat to see. You know what the fan base is, but you really don't until you're here and you're in it. And to see some of those videos, my wife was showing me some of the stuff at night, and just, you know, our locker room, I get chills when I talk about our locker room. I spoke to Steve pregame. We were talking about it a little bit, just you can't make that up, that feeling, and to draw that out, that was Hollywood-esque, the 4th and 12. You know, those 10 minutes, I lost some years of my life, but at least it was worth it. That was one of the funnest days of my life.
You know, I want to get you involved. We've been asking fans this all day, and it's our Twitter poll, and I want to get your thoughts on this, and it kind of deals with that. The biggest thing that Sean McDermott accomplished this year, I want to get your thoughts on that. On Twitter, we've been asking folks what's the most important thing McDermott did in his first year. About half of them say ending the playoff drought, 51%. 46% say laying the base for a new culture, building a new foundation for a culture. 2% say, you know, surviving that three-game losing streak. What's your thoughts on that? What's the best thing? I know he did a lot of good things, but if you had to isolate one thing, what's the best thing Sean McDermott accomplished in year one?
You know, I thought he handled adversity well, and he kept this team chugging along, no matter from some of the trades of the name players, you know, that we did in August, and even moving, you know, Marcel out in the season.
Yeah.
We had the three-game skid. We had the quarterback deal. There's a lot of – it's much easier to wreck the ship than keep it afloat. And I thought Sean did a great job of keeping our guys – I told the team this yesterday, sitting in the seat I'm in, I'm not in all those meeting rooms. I try to make practices when I'm here, but sometimes I'm out scouting. When I walked out on the practice field those days, or when I walked in the training room, it was like business as usual. And I thought Sean did a heck of a job of keeping our guys like this instead of doing like this.
What was your mindset when you actually saw the guys, especially after the quarterback switch, and then he throws the 5 interceptions? I mean, the guys on the team could have easily said, you know what, I don't know how much I buy into this whole process thing that Coach McDermott, but those guys stuck behind him. They rallied behind him when he made the switch back to Tyrod Taylor. What was your thought on the team after that?
Well, I think Sean handled it as well as you can handle it. Listen, nobody's perfect. Nobody's got all the answers. Nobody has a crystal ball. You know, I think he said it. He didn't regret the decision, but regretted the result. But Sean owned up and said, you know what, maybe we should have done this instead of this. And guys respect that. He didn't try and come in and make excuses. And, what happened. Let's move on. And that was, unbelievable job by him and his staff, you know, keeping our players focused each week, each practice.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because one of the things about building a new culture is the coach taking ownership for the new culture and taking ownership of something he might have done better.
Yeah.
And telling the team that and them jumping on board. And, you know, you said in your press conference you guys are going to evaluate. It's one of some of the things, I mean, it's hard to find much fault in the things that Sean and you have done this year. And you go back over the list, and any one of the things like Marcel and Sammy Darby, and then trading for, you know, the receiver, the DB, getting some assets back. All those things in, by themselves were monumental, and you had like 5 of them during the season. I mean, it was an unbelievable transformation, and yet now you're going to evaluate. What are you going to talk to Sean about what you can do better? I mean, what's the first thing on the list where you guys sit down and say, what about this?
Yeah, I think we're going to look at, each side of the ball. What did we do good on offense? Because we did some good things. We really did. You know, on a negative standpoint, we weren't consistent on offense. We hit some lulls. We had some good games where we, you know, we really ran the ball well, or you know, Tyrod's numbers were a little higher throwing. And then we had some games where we just couldn't punch the ball in the red zone. And, you know, that really, you know, hurt us in the Patriot games. We couldn't punch it in. And then this past week, first and goal on the 1.5. You have to look at yourself. What happened? What was the breakdown? You know, was it calls? Was it executions? Was it scheme? And there's a lot that goes into it. And the same thing defense. There were some games where, you know, we were stopping the run early and all of a sudden we hit that lull and people were running on us. You know, that Jet game and you know, New Orleans and you know, and the Chargers game got away from us. So we got to go back and look at the things we did well. And where were they personnel issues? What could we have done schematically to prepare those weeks? And we got to look in the mirror. You know, there's a lot of things I could have done better as well, quite honestly.
When you look back at the season, I remember when you guys first made the trade back in the summertime with Sammy and Darby. And I'm not going to lie, I'm a human. So I was like, man, I don't know if you can trade all of this talent away and actually still win some games, you know? Mm-hmm. So when you look back at it, did you walk into this thing and say, man, I know you said we got a lot of work to do, but how do we get some more talent in here, let some guys go, create or at least make our salary cap situation better, but also win some games? How hard is that to do for a general manager and for a coach like Sean McDermott?
You know, it's not easy, and you have to get some breaks along the way and things, and you have to get buy-in, which you have to give Sean and his staff a good job of buy-in, even when you see, you know, a guy, you know, Sammy or whoever you put in the name that we let go. But, you know, we had our reasons for why we made those moves, and, you know, we said good or bad, this is how we're going to build it. And it's just important. You know, locker room chemistry, Steve can speak to it. I know he knows the years that they went to the Super Bowl. Locker room chemistry was most likely higher than the years he didn't. I know from my experiences in Carolina, there were some years where we had a lot of the same characters, but the locker room didn't have this connected feel. And, you know, I really applaud these players and this coaching staff for what they did this season. With all that said, next year's a new year. We got to redo it again, and that's what we got to look at.
Brandon, is it difficult to build the kind of roster you want with the type of players you need and you want to have here and ship away talent to do that? I mean, you traded away and let some pretty good players go, guys who accomplished some things.
Yeah, it's not easy. And you know the initial reaction, what it's going to be, especially you're talking about guys who are high draft picks, things like that. It's not easy. But if you know your motive for doing it, and it's for – if every decision we make, we say we think this helps the Buffalo Bills, I take, you know, my motive out of it, Sean takes his, or whoever else is involved in the decision, ask yourself the question, does this make us better for what we're trying to do? If you can answer yes, you do the move, even if it's tough. And the human element makes it tough because these are people, these are families you're affecting, and we have to take that into consideration.
And that's the big thing that I noticed, too. I mean, Sean came in and had these beliefs, and he'd addressed them and told us all that that's what he believed about guys that wanted to pull together and create that culture in the locker room. Everybody says that. A lot of guys say that. But, man, when it comes to trading away, you know, great players, really talented players, they're not willing to do it.
No.
And that's the thing that has set Sean, I think, apart and this staff apart and you. You're willing to do that. No matter how good the player is, there's something bigger that you're working towards, and there's a different goal, and that guy does not fit in. And that's the big difference I see in this staff, that they were willing to do that to get better. That's hard.
When you're coming to make those decisions, do you lose sleep at night? I mean, because
it's like,
all right, we want good character guys, but, man, this dude is a baller on the field, you know?
Right.
So it's like,
I guess we didn't believe you.
It's like, this dude is a beast on the field. I mean, do we really want to do this? I mean, do you lay up at night, just can't sleep thinking about this stuff?
Well, you try to be methodical with your approach. You don't, you know, just take a phone call and just do it within 10 minutes. You try to think about it. You talk about it. Sometimes you talk to somebody and you say, hey, confidentially, what do you think this is going to be? And, they may not be involved in the decision, but you just want to – sometimes you need to hear somebody else. They may say, you know what, this is what I see could be an issue with that from my point of view.
Yeah.
And you have to consider all the facts, but then when you make that decision, you got to stand by it and you got to move forward. And, if you're going to sit in this seat long enough, you got to make tough calls, and you know we got more, you know, more to make as we move forward.
With Brandon Bean, the Bills' general manager, just going over the 2017 season, you know, I'm looking at your roster or a depth chart anyway. There's a list of names of we got great fans here. 10 months ago, some of these names meant absolutely nothing to Bills fans, and I'm talking about guys like Deontay Thompson and Eddie Yarbrough, Cappy, guys who contributed, Ryan Davis, guys who were kind of factors in what you guys did this season who weren't even on anybody's radar. So your roster kind of underwent a season-long transformation. It didn't just end after you traded away Sammy Watkins or even Marcel in October, right?
Yeah, and I think a couple of the names, you know, E.J. Gaines I'd throw in there. You know, mm-hmm. we were 8-3 with E.J. in the lineup, and that's what got left out of the trades. You know, unfortunately, Jordan Matthews got injured.
I was just about to say, yeah.
You know, but Jordan brought a lot of leadership things. He is a pro's pro. You know, I don't know if you guys had him on the air, how well you got know Jordan.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Unfortunately, the thing you can't control is health, and he does the chip fracture of his sternum
into
his first practice. He does that, and so he can't practice the whole preseason. And then, you know, he's getting going. He had a couple good games. He makes the catch in Atlanta to put us up. And then at the very end on that little smoke screen, breaks his thumb. He only misses one game. You know, he showed some toughness. He comes out playing receiver with a splint. And then, unfortunately, he hurt his knee and it had a setback, and we couldn't get it going. But E.J. Gaines, Deontay Thompson, you know, the snow catch, you know, that helped win that game for us. So, you know, that's a credit to my personnel staff of keeping, you know, doing a good job bringing the names. We did the workouts, the coaches as well, because the coaches, when you bring a guy in the middle of the season, now they got to put a young coach on him and teaching him everything while the other guy's scheming up for whoever we're playing this week. So a lot of people put a lot of time, and that's what I'm very appreciative of, everybody that made these things happen for us.
How big was it to see some of these rookies actually come in and start? Guys like your first round, Tre'Davious, Deion, I mean, Matt Milano, all of these guys come in and play big-time minutes, actually start for you and actually help you win some games.
Yeah, it's huge, you know, when you can get young guys, especially rookies, the kind of playing time we did. We charted it through the year based on what other teams were doing. And there was a couple of teams ahead of us, but I think we were in the top three or top four mm-hmm. of rookie play time and significant minutes. You talked about, you know, Trey White, Zay Jones. You know, Zay did a lot of good things. He had some things he got to work on, mm-hmm. you know, some of the drops early. And but he's a pro's pro. Nobody wants it more than Zay. You see the prep he does. Deion, I mean, with Cordy having the setback on his foot, Deion was originally, he was competing for that right tackle spot.
Right.
We're going to have Cordy on the left. It's not easy just to flop a guy over. It's a little different than playing a receiver lining up on the right and then lining up on the left.
No, it's not that easy. Don't do that to the wide receiver.
But, you know, going from right tackle to left tackle, you know, as a rookie,
right.
You got to give Deion a lot of credit.
Right.
He held his own. Matt Milano, you know, ended up winning and starting job over Ramon during the season and found himself around the ball, made a big play right before the half that Oakland game. You know, he had a pick. Tanner Vallejo had the knee injury at camp, which set him back, but played some significant special teams minutes. So it was great to get those guys the experience.
And I got to go back to Tre'Davious, though, who, you know, deep into the first round. I don't know if you saw it, and I don't know how much you pay attention to, like, analytics sites. Pro Football Focus had him rated the third-best corner in the league, not rookie corner, third-best, highest-graded corner in the league.
Yeah.
He had a sensational rookie year.
He really did.
He really did a good job, you know, and – Tre'Davious, kind of like Sean McDermott's demeanor. He's just a grinder. He does this. He's steady Eddie. You know, he had one game where I thought he just, the Cincinnati game got the best of him. But you know what? He bounced back, and he did what corners, you know, the good ones do. He shook it off. He didn't get scared. He's ready to line back up, and you know, he made great plays for us the whole season.
When you guys got started up here, the roster turned over a lot during the preseason, even before you got to training camp. And then when you got to training camp, it continued. And I don't know what the numbers are from the last 53 they had last year till what it is now, but it's a significant churning of the – I'm not churning just to say they're new guys, but you changed a lot of players out of the roster. Do you – and you can't see the future, but do you anticipate that to be a thing going forward? Do you anticipate that? I know there's every team's got new players. Even the team that I was on that was going to the Super Bowl every year, we had 10 or 12 new guys every year.
Yeah.
Do you anticipate that kind of
changeover? Necessarily from, you know, from May. You know, I was looking at it going into this last week, and from May until this year, we had 16 guys that were on our final 53 that weren't here at the beginning of May. And that's a high number. That's higher than normal. Some of those due to trades, some of the things that won't happen every year, and some of the moves we made. Part is just trying to churn. You mentioned the word churn the bottom of the roster. I think we'll get a lot of that done earlier in the year, pre-draft and then into the draft versus that. But as we build it, but until we get it where we want it, we are going to continue to churn the bottom of the roster and incrementally get better.
Now, this is your season now. Like, this is your season where it's time to get to work. You get out on the road. I know you were asked a question about your philosophy in terms of free agency. For me, your draft philosophy, and I was just talking to you about the rookies that actually came and played. Do you have however many picks you guys had this year, do you go in and say, look, our first couple round picks, we need these guys to play right away? Or do you go in and say, we need at least half of these guys to give us significant playing time?
Yeah, I mean, I never want to put myself in the box and say we expect two guys to start or four guys to play X number. The goal is for all these guys to be contributors. Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes it works out where a late-round guy ends up on your practice squad or a little bit or something like that. But when we're drafting, we're looking to get guys, you know, how's this guy going? And that's what you got to ask when you get later in the rounds, fourth, fifth round. How does this guy make your roster? Who does he upgrade? How do you know? Because you don't want to just be picking – fifth rounders that you go, man, he's not even going to make our roster.
Right.
So you got to ask yourself that question. In the first round, you got to be asking, why would this guy fail? You know he's going to make rosters, but what would cause this guy to fail at the position he's at? And you got to answer that. Mm-hmm. And you got to be honest about it, or you're going to, you know, you open yourself up to drafting a bust.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Brandon Bean is our guest in studio. Just a couple of more minutes with the general manager of the Bills. Well, let's kind of look forward here, and you got all those draft picks. You got basically five premium picks, right, in the first three rounds.
Yeah.
What can you do with a quarterback there? I mean, how do you set yourself up to maybe look at quarterbacks and you know, put something together to move up, who knows, maybe near or at the top of the draft to get a quarterback?
Yeah, you know, it's early to decide what makes the most sense. The exciting thing is, you said, we got some premium picks. We got eight picks in the top five rounds. Mm-hmm. Which I've never had, and I'm excited about. A guy in my seat, you get super, you know, excited. That's like double Christmas. you know, we'll see. We're going to go through the process. We're going to evaluate our quarterbacks. We're going to evaluate, you know, free agent quarterbacks, just as we'll do every position. We're going to evaluate our linebackers. We'll evaluate the free agents. We'll evaluate the draft, and we'll see where we think we can get the best bang for our buck.
Have you spent much time yet looking at the crop of college quarterbacks, though? I mean, do you have scouts?
Yes.
I know you have scouts out there, but
yes.
Is there focus on quarterbacks? Or
they're doing their job just as they would do it whether we had – you know, all stars at every position. Their job is to evaluate their area. We look at that, and then Joe and Brian Gain, and we've divided things up. I've seen, you know, between the three of us, we've seen all the main quarterbacks. I've pretty much seen them all. So, you know, that's only part of it, though. That's the on-field stuff, what you can see. We still got a lot to do when you're talking about a quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, off the field, how does he learn the offense? What does he know? What's he been taught? You know, what type of person is he? What is his leadership? You know, there's so many intangibles for that position that we don't know yet. And so we're kind of halfway through the process.
Yes. You know, Murph and I get the question all the time, do you think they'll move up to get a quarterback or something like that? And we're like, I don't know. I mean, my mentality – from now recent history with the moves that you guys have made, I don't think you're scared to make any move. I don't think you're scared to trade away whatever. If it's a guy that you feel like you really want, you're going to go and get that person.
You scare us with some of the
moves. Yeah, exactly.
I'm sure I do. Believe me, I scare my own kids sometimes. I get texts from them on some of the moves we've made. But that's the way it goes.
Yeah, you're picking back-to-back 21-22.
Yes.
Probably not going to get one of those quarterbacks down there.
Yeah, you know, again, that's where
– at least not one of the top two or three
yeah,
that
that's
talking
where,
about.
Yeah,
the guys on the short list.
Generally, you know, if you've got some, you know, some high, you know, value guys, which, you know, everybody's claiming to be
right.
This year, you know, they're not going to fall to 21 or 22. But maybe there's some guys there that we like. Maybe there's a guy another round. Maybe we answer it in free agency. We're literally going to take this thing very methodically, and we're going to, you know, look at every avenue. Again, not only quarterback, but other. If we don't select the quarterback at 21, 22, we're going to get two dang good players right there that are really going to help us. Yeah.
Right. As far as free agent quarterbacks, a lot of people believe and have said, especially in recent years, that if a quarterback is really worth much, he's not going to wind up in the free agent market. Do you believe that to be the case?
You know, there's always, generally speaking, I think that's there's probably some truth to that, but there's always situations where guys, you know, get out there. Look at Drew Brees, how he got out there. You know, again, there's a lot more exceptions than the rules, but sometimes guys get out there for a certain reason. Sometimes the system here, you know, in this team didn't fit them, or they were backup and you only saw so much of them. You know, there's a lot of factors, and that's where we got to do our job and do our due diligence and find out why are they out there.
Yeah. Brandon Breen is in studio with us. Just a couple of minutes left with the general manager of the Buffalo Bills. I want to ask you about the process that you guys go through now, and you're very early in the player evaluation process. You've had your exit interviews, I would assume, with most players, if not all of them by now?
Yeah, there's a couple. I actually got a text after my press conference. There was one of them up there looking for me. But I've spoken to – Sean has talked to pretty much every one of them. I've talked to some. I've got some left. I've talked to three today. But I've told them I'm here all week. And so if I miss you and you want to come up whenever, let's talk about your experience this year. And I'm looking for feedback from them on how they view this place and how Sean and I are running it, as much as I'll be candid with them on what I see.
You know, how do you view building relationships with players? You're the general manager, so you got to make a lot of tough decisions. Mm-hmm. So do you try to stay away from – Coach McDermott, it's his job to build that relationship with those guys.
Right.
Do you try to stay away from – necessarily becoming friends with a guy or something like that?
No, I think I just let it naturally happen. Some guys are going to be more open, talk about family. There's, you know, there's been some cases where my wife or their wives are, you know, have intertwined, whether it was a Bible study or, you mm-hmm. know, at a game, or, you know, we were at a hockey game with some of them one night and you naturally talk. I just let it naturally happen. And what I've found is if you're making a tough decision with them, be honest with them, you know, whether it's letting them go. You know, Philly Brown is an example. I was with Philly in Carolina, and to let him go right at the 53 cut was not an easy deal. And it was hard for me to tell him that. But I've found if you tell people the truth, even if they're mad at you at the point, at that point, generally they come around and understand you're just trying to do your job best of your ability.
Yeah. Players appreciate honesty, even if it's not bad, if it's not good news.
And that's my, you know, again, I know some of them didn't like hearing what you say, but Sean and I both try and talk to them all and just be straight up with this is why we're making the decision.
Hey, Brandon, in making the kind of personnel decisions you'll make, how much input from the coaching staff and how much do you want that input from the coaching staff?
Yeah, we're gonna do a thorough one this week, and we'll literally go through every player. We'll sit with the offensive coaches and then separately sit with the defensive coaches. And we'll go through every player by position, and the position coach will tell me his thoughts, how he was on the field, how he was in the meeting room, how he was prep. You know, he did everything during the week, but on game day he just couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, he struggled he loafed during the week, but on game day he brought it. We'll talk to our medical people. How is he in the weight room? What does he do in the off season to prepare? So we'll literally try and just build – a little library on each player, what everybody's thought. And I've had it before when you do this, sometimes the strength coach loves and raves about this guy, how hard he works, and then I hear from the trainer, the guy avoids, doesn't do what he's supposed to do. So, you know, you hear that and you try and just build, you know, a little library on each guy.
Now, if there is a guy who you truly want to bring back, but the contract just doesn't allow you to do it, how hard is it for you to juggle, okay, we should just go ahead and cut him, or we need to try to rework this contract?
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, if that number that he's at is not sustainable or he's not playing at that value, all right, would you like this? You have to answer the question. Would you like this player at a lesser value? Mm-hmm. You know, and if you answer yes, okay, you reach out to the agent, maybe the player directly as well, and say, hey, we're going to contact your agent about this. But it's got to be a two-way street, and you got to be able to understand that they may say, because I've had it before where you try and talk them into it, and they accept it, and then they're not happy they accepted it, and that's not a good – you got to say, hey, if you sign this, you're telling me you're good with this. You're happy to be here at this number. If not, let's just mutually part ways.
Donald and I have had a couple of weeks long joke about how you start to look ahead to next season and what the personnel needs might be, and there seem to be a lot. I mean, we just talk about add it to the list, add that to the list, but that's got to be right on your right in front of you now. Like, you must have a list of needs, and knowing kind of how this offseason might play out, you'll have to address these in some fashion.
Yeah, I mean, we have a long way to go. We really do. We have to be honest with ourselves, and each year is its own year, and we have a lot, we have some guys, we have some older guys, we have a lot of free agents. We got to get younger at some positions, we got to get better at certain positions. We know we have a lot of work to do, no matter if we had been 0-16 or 16-0 this year. And we have to be honest. And that's where, I've got to tell the assistant coaches, be honest with yourself. Take the person, there's always a little bit of the personal side to it, but do your best to take the personal side out when you give me your opinion, because it is a collaborative deal. I want to hear what the assistant coach thinks. I want to hear what the coordinator thinks. I want to hear what Sean thinks. I want to hear what some of my scouts think, who don't interact with these players in meeting rooms or on the field. They're just observing. And sometimes you'll hear different things. It's perfect when everybody, it's easier when everybody says, keep this player or move on from this player.
Right. Well, as you said in the news conference a little bit ago, for instance, Kyle Williams. Who doesn't love Kyle Williams?
Right.
There's a lot more factors than loving Kyle Williams at play here, right?
Yeah. Kyle, he's such a leader. You open a dictionary and you see leader, Kyle Williams is in there, and I was so impressed with him. I had looked at him from afar because I told him the story. We thought in Carolina he might be a cap casualty a couple years ago. They had made a coaching change, and sometimes a new coach and regime number. And we had looked at him, Gettleman and I had, and we talked about, like, maybe they'll release him. That's just as a player, and didn't know anything about him as a person. And you get here and you go, no wonder they didn't let this guy go. Yeah, they'd be crazy to let this guy go. And just so impressed with how he leads. And guys love him from different backgrounds, different ethnicities, different age, from veterans to rookies. He really brought an element that was special to this team, and I know how special he is to the city. And Kyle, he and I had a good conversation yesterday. I know he and Sean did as well. We'll let it play out. He's going to go home to Louisiana and think about it, and we'll talk. But we'd love to have him back.
Well, Donald said it a few minutes ago. This is your season now, right? You take over now, basically. And you got a lot of work to do. No, you appreciate that, right?
Do have a lot of work to do. Looking forward to the process. It is fun to go through this. And that's where we have to be honest. But we're going to grind, and we're going to get it right. And, it starts now.
Great. Brandon, thanks. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Hope to see you again before next August, anyway.
You got to get the weather fixed.
Brandon being the general manager of the Bills. Steve sticking with us. Donald and I back with more. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
That was good conversation with Brandon Bean right there, as he talked about his process. He talked about the team and how the team – look, I'm not going to lie to you. I thought this team was in rough shape. Now, we said you have enough talent on this team to go, 8, 7, 8, 9 wins. And they ended up with 9 wins. Those 9 wins got them in the playoffs. But I didn't think that they'd be able to do it. Once they made those moves and traded Sammy away and traded Darby away, they traded Marcelo. Especially after the Marcelo trade, it was like, hold on a second now. What what are we doing here? What are we really trying to do?
They got a lot of backlash, and I think it was interesting. He said, you lose some sleep over, because basically you got to know you're going to get some backlash from it.
Yeah.
The media is going to kill you about it, and the fans are going to – some of the fans are going to crush you about it. But if you really think you're going to get better by doing it, you got to do it. And – this coaching staff and this regime with Sean and Brandon are more willing to part ways with great players who don't fit because they think they can get better than any crew I've ever seen coach in this organization.
And we talked about it with Brandon a second ago. You said it. Everybody comes in and says, we want character guys. We're going to draft good character guys, have good character guys. These guys cut and released and traded away talent to ensure that they had their type of
big players. Time talent.
Yes, right. That's difficult to do.
The star talent, yeah, and that's nobody else does that. They just don't have the courage to do it because they don't want the backlash, and for whatever reason, and well, I guess the reason's obvious. It got to the playoffs with them.
Right.
You got to admit it. in the years leading up to this season, they're better without those guys than they were with them.
Right.
There was stuff out around the league that you could trade for with that talent to get not only get guys in here that made the team better than they were with the more talented players, but also gave you more draft capital to boot. That's pretty difficult to do. And I think that when you look back at this season, yeah, the drought was over, but I think the fact that the drought was over and they also made all these moves, and I was telling you, these monumental moves that otherwise other years we've never seen anything
right.
And get to the playoffs with them, it's pretty unbelievable.
You know, it's one thing to trade away talent or cut guys right now, and it's going to happen. They're going to cut some guys, as he talked about cap casualties, all of that stuff. They're going to cut some guys in the next couple of months that people are like, really? You cut that guy? You know, but it's a lot easier to do it now. When you do it when they actually traded Sammy and Darby away, and then they brought in E.J. Gaines, and people are like, who? And Jordan Matthews, and people are like, who?
Right,
you know, to do it at that point in the season, that takes a lot of guts to do, because that's why people went and said, man, this team is tanking. They're not trying to win games. But, you know, they study these players a lot more. And those guys came in and really contributed. Now you're in a situation where you're like, man, can you bring an E.J. Gaines back, or is he going to want some big money somewhere else?
Hey, Steve, we started the show and been talking much of the day about evaluating, you know, where this team is at and what they did in 2017. Our Twitter poll deals with the Sean McDermott effect, and I want to get a thought from you. What is the biggest thing, the best thing that Sean McDermott did in 2017? That's our Twitter poll. We've been talking about it all day long. The best thing that Sean McDermott did in his first year. About half and half now, 51% say the best thing was end the playoff drought, 46% say laying the foundation for a new culture and getting through that three-game losing streak, also just 2%. Where would you go on this, Steve? What do you think?
Yeah, I think breaking the drought, I can get into the playoffs. I mean, it vindicates everything else they did. Now, certainly the conference was in a situation this year where you had those three teams, the Chargers, the Titans, the Bills, and Baltimore. All hovering around 9-7, and the Bills winning the tiebreaker to get in along with the Titans. So certainly they got some help because there weren't like three 10-6 teams trying to get into the wild card, you know. And the Chargers got off to the slowest of starts,
right?
Otherwise, you know, they're in. So they did get a little help in that, but nevertheless, I mean, this is an organization with a new teams that didn't make the playoffs and make head coaching changes because they were whatever 6-10 or 5-11, 7-9, whatever, you name the losing record. You rarely see a new head coach come in and take that team to the playoffs.
Right.
It happens, I guess, once in a while. But, you know, usually it's like, you're going to stink for a year or two or or just miss the playoff or be out of the playoffs or just be another and also ran. You don't get to the playoffs. And the fact that they were able to do that while making all these huge cultural changes and personnel changes with top players – it was an unbelievable ride this year for Bills fans and the organization and people watching.
See, I think when I think about getting to the playoffs, and I know a lot of fans voted in the drought because they just wanted to end the drought. They were tired of hearing about it.
Yeah,
they didn't want to be in the playoffs. When I think about it, I think about it from the standpoint of, as we were talking to Brandon about these young players that played. Now, next year, I don't know what this team is going to look like. There's a lot of free agents on this team. You might have a fully new team next year. You got a lot of draft picks. So I don't know what it's going to look like, but I'll say this. You got a lot of young guys on this team that now know what it feels like to get to the playoffs. And that, when you talk about a culture, they're like, man, that felt good to play in the playoff game. We lost, but it felt good to be there, you know, and that's not something I ever had here. I never knew what it was like to play in the playoffs in January, but now you have young guys coming back that are like, look, this is how we – so you talk about Kyle and all this leadership. You got young guys like Tre'Davious now. When they draft some younger guys than him, this year they bring in some younger guys than him, he's going to say, listen, that's not how you get things done, you know. And these guys know what it feels like. They know the work that it took to get there. They know what it feels like to get there, and they want to go further in the playoffs. And so I think that is changing the culture.
And I think also you're going to see the benefits of this culture change when those young players do come in, because you got like guys like Tre'Davious White and Zay Jones and these guys, Charles Clay, and guys like Kyle Williams, who – Preston Brown, you know, Lorenz, all these guys that are just high-quality guys who are real pros, those young players are going to come in and watch how it's done and say, okay, I'm in. I'm going to do it like that. And they're going to, you know, they don't have to flop around watching these guys, you know, get suspended and not care about it in the locker room. It'll kind of casually walk through the locker room like they don't care. You know, it's going to be a different atmosphere in the locker room from start.
Yeah.
So they're going to gain more at the other end when the season progresses and they get the benefit of all the little things they've done day, right. day after day after day after day at the end of the season. That's when you reap the benefits from all of that. It builds on itself. So I think now with this culture change and as far as they've taken it,
yeah.
they're going to start seeing benefits of that even now in the off season.
Now, you're going to have a lot of young draft picks. So Coach McDermott is still going to have to work at making sure those guys will fall into place. But you have to imagine he doesn't have to necessarily work as hard because you still will have some guys that have been there now. They know what it feels like. So those guys are new leaders. Even if you bring a Kyle Williams back and you still have Lorenzo and all of these guys, you have a lot more leaders on the team now. You have guys that know this is what we did last year. This is the work it took. So as the coach, I don't have to necessarily be in there all the time saying, guys, this is playoff caliber. This is what we need to do, all of that stuff, because the young guys and the rest of the guys on the team are actually say that stuff yeah. for me.
Yep. Let's take a couple of calls while Steve is with us. Steve Tasker joining us in studio. Naya calling from Vancouver, British Columbia. Hello, Naya.
Hey, John. How you doing?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Steve, Donald, hello, gentlemen.
How you doing?
Great. My comment, I don't want to beat this horse to death, but going back to Sunday's game, I thought there was one key thing when we're down on the one-yard line, first and goal, that we failed to do, and that was going back to the Miami game where we used our refrigerator play and bringing Kyle Williams to plow it into the end zone. I thought that would have been the key to the game.
That's interesting, Naya. He's calling. Steve, you were down there in Jacksonville the other day. Naya wonders why they didn't run Kyle Williams again down on the goal line, 1.5 yard line.
Yeah, there's been a lot said about that. I mean, that's Tyrod checked out of that play, out of a run play, and tried to throw it. And actually, they got the the penalty, offensive pass interference on right. Kelvin Benjamin. But I'm sure that if they'd have gotten in there, but let's face it, they put Kyle in at fullback. Everybody in the stadium knows they may give it to him because everybody that's been the play of the organization for the last 7 or 8 days. So that was a surprise play in Miami. It worked to perfection. You wouldn't get that same benefit in Jacksonville the next week.
Yeah, and like you said, there's a lot been made of them actually throwing the ball down there. But like I've been saying the last couple of days, that's the reason you brought Kelvin Benjamin in here, Yep. And the defense, we always talk about Tyrod doesn't read the defense. Does he have the relationship with Rick Dennison so that he can make calls? He actually made the right call on there. He actually – got up there to the line of scrimmage. There was no safety help, none of that stuff. It was one-on-one, So what are you going to run LeSean McCoy in there? There's one in a thousand. Well, it's not one in a thousand, but you don't go into there thinking, all right, we're going to get an offensive pass interference here. You go into that play saying, look, we can either get incomplete or we're going to get a defensive pass
That's
interference.
That's right. That guy's going to have to get right. physical with Kelvin to compete for the ball because
exactly.
he's so much bigger. Yeah,
right, exactly. So, yeah. I mean, it wasn't executed because you got the offensive pass interference. But that wasn't the wrong call. It was a run-pass option, and Tyrod made the right read. It was one-on-one out there. It was up to Kelvin Benjamin to make the play. He just wasn't able to make the play, and he got the pass interference. But I'm telling you, I think people are really overplaying that call right there.
And, again, it's the offensive pass interference that created
right.
the biggest issue.
Right.
Right. Anyway, let's take another phone call. Here is Butch in Buffalo. Butch, go ahead. You're on the air.
John, Donald, and Steve, it's a pleasure to talk to you guys. First of all, I want to say it was an awesome, awesome segment with Brandon Bean. I'm really very intrigued about Brandon Bean. He's a very smart guy. He knows exactly where to take this franchise along with Sean. But now saying that, you guys both said, Donald, you said about you're not shocked about how Brandon is not afraid to pull the trigger on getting rid of anybody.
Right.
Since you said that, we're going to go back to an event that happened today. Mike Shula, offensive coordinator for the Carolina Panthers, released from his position as offensive coordinator for the Panthers. With the familiarity of him, Mike, Sean, along with Kelvin Benjamin, who he brought in as a rookie, and know the plays and design, I think that he would be a good fit here in Buffalo because Mike Dennison is not the guy to be offensive coordinator. He's, he did an okay job, but it was over his head. I mean, offensive coordinator was over his head. And I really believe that if you get Mike Shula here, along with.
It was over his head. He's been coordinator in the league for years, Butch. What do you mean it was over his head?
He over his head, what I mean, John, is by. Yeah, he's probably been in a position that far. But far as what we need to do in Buffalo, New York, based off all the years of not going to playoff, all the players that we have, he was over his head here.
And I disagree. So all that not going to the playoffs, that impacted how Rick Dennison did his job here? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, I'm going to say that. Just cause I'm, okay, since you guys, since you said that, John, I'm going to go to that one play on the goal line that you just called out. Offensive coordinator wouldn't even call that. With the defensive backs they have on Jacksonville anyway, the shutdown corners, why would you even call a pass to Ramsey's side of the field?
Why do you have Kelvin Benjamin on the roster if you're not going to use him? I'm not saying that was the right call, but no. You're going to use him down there, aren't you?
Right.
I'm telling you, you're right. I mean, no, you're right. He's a good target. But at this time, let's bang the football. You got Mike Tolbert. You got a big 300. It's just like the caller said before, even about our D tackle, Williams. I mean, you pound that ball. You're right about what you're saying, John, about Calvin Benjamin being that big receiver. I'm saying all season long, this has been called play calling.
Yeah, I disagree. Do you guys have any thoughts on that? It's a big failure down there, first and goal, 1.5 yards out. I wouldn't have called that play. I would have probably run McCoy. But to say that it's been a play calling issue all season long, there have been some I've disagreed with and some I thought, pretty good idea, pretty good way to go.
That play call I don't disagree with. If it was a run-pass option, I don't disagree with it because it's based on what the defense actually gives you. Now, are there certain points in the season where I thought, you probably could have run something else there? Yeah, I've thought that in many games. The issue is this organization for a long time hadn't been to the playoffs and hadn't been a winning organization because you continuously fire coaches. And you bring in another coach that says, all right, I need this type of player, you know. So now you have Coach McDermott in place, and I know a lot of people are saying you need to bring in a different offensive coordinator. Well, this coordinator needs what he needs to run his system, you know. So could he be fired? I don't know. Any one of these coaches could be fired after the season.
They might let him go.
But I don't think Coach McDermott is going to just react on impulse like that. He is going to truly evaluate this thing, and I would think that he would probably give – Rick Dennison the benefit of the doubt and say, look, we're going to allow you to get the players you need to run your offense.
It's like the fans have to have a human sacrifice.
One of the crucial elements, he was talking about, David Shula down in Carolina, and maybe there is a relationship there, but I think one of the things you have to look at with any coordinator, both on defense or on offense, is this. Inside the locker room, Sean McDermott, the offensive staff, the running backs, receivers, the quarterback coach, the coordinator, and the head coach all evaluate the guys on that, the players on that side of the football. And they know the limitations. The coordinator's job isn't to install his offense and run it at all costs. What the job of an NFL coach is to get the most out of the guys you have on that roster, on that week, in that game. That's what the really good coordinators can do and do on a regular basis. It doesn't matter what his offensive philosophy is. It doesn't matter whether he likes to run the ball or throw the ball. It doesn't matter whether he's got an elite quarterback or if he's got a quarterback who is an athlete. It doesn't, or if he's just running wildcat. It doesn't, if his quarterback's hurt and he's, you know, whatever. Whoever is on the field, he has to know who they are, know what they can do, know how they can do it, and what the other team has on their defensive side of the ball and how to attack it with everything he doesn't have as an offense. He's got to attack them with what he does have, with their strengths, against their weaknesses. And for me, you, us, anybody outside that locker room or just sitting in the stands or watching on TV to make judgments about how good or bad an offensive coordinator is just being a fan. Because you just don't know.
Right.
You just don't know.
Steve, thanks for this. We'll get you on again. We appreciate you coming by. Steve Tasker from NFL on CBS in studio. Donald and I back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
It's presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. What have we learned from today's show? We had Trey Wingo on from the ESPN NFL Live Show. Trey Wingo talked about Tyrod Taylor's future with the Buffalo Bills.
But I think that change is coming. Whether or not you or I believe
that Tyrod should be there. I think they don't believe that he's going to be the future going forward based on everything we've seen. So I think there's going to be a change of quarterback for the Bills, and they're going to try and either go with Nathan Peterman and believe they have something there or try and bring somebody else in.
That's Trey Wingo. We also had Brandon Bean in studio with us, the Bills general manager, for a long time earlier this hour, and he talked about the Bills roster moves that they made seemingly all season long.
It's not easy, and you know the initial reaction, what it's going to be, especially you're talking about guys who are high draft picks, things like that. It's not easy, but if you know your motive for doing it, and it's for if every decision we make, we say we think this helps the Buffalo Bills. I take, you know, my motive out of it. Sean takes his, or whoever else is involved in the decision. Ask yourself the question, does this make us better for what we're trying to do? If you can answer yes, you do the move, even if it's tough. And the human element makes it tough.
Brandon Bean makes it sound simple.
He does. It's not that easy.
All right, we got another good show coming up tomorrow. Hope you can join us then. I want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Production assistants from J.J. Torito, George Blast, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Kelly Rood, Olivia Merrill, our producer, Jay Harris. We're back tomorrow at noon with the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.